Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 276. I'm your host this time around, Steve Raker, raking at you from the comic book bunker. This episode, you'll hear from Kevin Whirlwind X, Andrew the LA Rabbit, and I as we reach the milestone 100th issue of the Thunderbolts, as well as hear about Andrew's journey to the San Diego Comic-Con last week. But first, WWX Kev and I are going to catch up. That's right. It's talking about Marvel time, Kevin.
All right. An abbreviated previews is back again. I just need to break up the coolometer. If we could rate things according to a coolometer, that would be pretty awesome, too.
Remember the coolometer? And it wasn't just comic book things, too, that they would put in it for whatever reason. That was a really odd era of the bullpen bulletins, wasn't it?
I always recall that. It's one of those things that if you read those issues, you're just like, what is up with that? It's sort of like the Hostess fruit snacks type of thing. It's like one of those things you always remember, like, oh, that was an era.
Yeah, yeah. Like things like stinky socks would sometimes be on the cool side or the not cool side. They were like weird things. It was very Mad Magazine-ish there for a little bit.
So are you going in chronological order this time, according to the catalog, or are you just jumping all over?
Well, no. Page by page. Blurb by blurb.
If you have an order, Steve, I know how people can be about orders.
No, I'm very orderly.
Okay.
At least in my podcasting mind. But I thought it would be fun, again, hashtag talking about Marvel. And you know the inside joke of that is that years ago when Kevin and I were doing a segment, for whatever reason, we were just talking about everything that put in the kitchen sink, throwing it in. And when I sent the file to David to throw together on this here podcast, along with whatever else he was coming up with, I had just called the file talking about Marvel and sent it to him. And whatever, for I can't remember the circumstances, but David couldn't put the episode out that time around, so he sent the file over to Derek Coward, the grand poobah of the Comic Book Noise podcast and the Deliberate Noise Network, and he put out the file as is, and that ended up being the name of a episode of Marvel Noise, is just talking about Marvel. And don't you know, that thing got so many hits over the next several years. Every month it was getting just dozens and dozens of downloads. It was very, very strange, and so it's been one of those inside jokes ever since then. The talking about Marvel, whenever we hashtag it, it seems like good things happen.
It's a point one. It's a zero issue.
And also, Kevin and I, way back when, at times went through the entire Marvel Previews catalog, talking about all the new books and everything, except now we talk about the books we've read and try to keep up with some of the new books instead. But what's still fun to do, at least I like to do it, and I have to drag Kevin in because anything with previews he wants to be a part of, is go over some of the collected editions of the classic material. You know, the material from the Foom generation and some of the 80s and 90s stuff as well. Not the stuff from the current titles.
No, and you wouldn't want that stuff.
And I go page by page through those collected materials, but just hitting on the ones that are meaningful. Like, for instance, the Daredevil Omnibus. They're finally doing an omnibus of the first few Marvel Masterworks of Daredevil. With a spiffy new Alex Ross cover.
Yeah, what is this, like four volumes maybe? Because it goes up to issue 41, an annual, an FF issue, and not brand. Yeah.
Yep, it's nice as it's oversized. It's good material. Right through the Gene Colan stuff.
Yeah, you have Daredevil on his spaceship to the moon.
And the Marvel Masterworks this month is going, and this is the stuff that's in the previews catalog right now that's being solicited for October and November and some of the stuff even beyond. Like this Marvel Masterworks, even though it's being solicited this month, they're saying it's not until February because they keep advance soliciting this stuff. It's the next Uncanny X-Men Marvel Masterworks, now up to volume 10, which continues on to the Chris Claremont long run, but now they've surpassed the Paul Smith era. They're past 175 and into 176 to 188, which is the beginning of the John Romita Jr. stuff.
Yeah, I've only read up to 183.
I tell you. And it also includes Magic 1 through 4 and the back end of Marvel Fanfare number 40, which was a Chris Claremont, Craig Hamilton Storm story. That was actually very well illustrated, even though it was kind of a kooky story with Storm and Mystique changing into a lot of different forms and kind of giving her a psychological... some psychological warfare against Storm, I should say. But these issues of the X-Men, not my favorite. I mean, when I left comics in, like, that next year, part of the reason that I was able to do it was I was able to kind of give up my X-Men because the storytelling really got muddled here. It's from Scott on the Island to... there's another run-in with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and Caliban and Kitty's wedding. Some weird Storm stuff. I don't know. It does have the first, what is it, the Life Death?
Yeah.
The Barry Windsor Smith issue, but it's got the Dire Wraiths issue, too, in 187, where they fight the Dire Wraiths. But I thought the art and the storytelling wasn't the strongest during this era, especially coming off of Byrne, Cockrum, and Paul Smith.
I got to decide what to do about this one. Because I have, like, the Omnibus. And they put on, like, an epic, what was it, just after this? Or part of this? I'm not sure, so.
Of the X-Men material?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they putting one out? It's hard to keep all the epics straight.
Yeah, I bought the Omnibus, and then after that have the Masterworks. I had a Masterworks of the Phoenix Saga stuff that was signed by Claremont and Terry Austin, so I didn't want to give that up and switch to another Omnibus necessarily. So yeah. I just went with the Masterworks of that stuff and through the Cockrum, the second Cockrum era and through that Paul Smith stuff. And I'm done. I'm done with volume 9. I don't want to be reminded of this stuff.
I'll keep on going all the way through.
Another Omnibus gets published in February 2017, The War of Kings Aftermath, which has a whole kit and caboodle of stuff.
Oh, they've done these in, like, three different formats, I think, now, and they still don't have Nova in a standalone. So I'm like, should I just sell my other stuff and just get these? Because these seem pretty comprehensive. Like, they had the Prelude and then the Aftermath. Yep. All good stuff, though, for the most part.
This is the Realm of Kings, and it's got some of the Son of Hulk stuff where they tied it in, and the Micronauts making the little appearance there. And the Guardians of the Galaxy, end of that series, the Abnett and Lanning series, as it went into the Thanos Imperative. And all that stuff is all in there, including all the Annihilator stuff.
But what about that war, Steve, that never happened? It was supposed to happen with Black Bolt and, I don't know, weird.
Next is an Alpha Flight Omnibus, which is... includes not only the first 29 issues of Alpha Flight, so it's got all the Byrne Alpha Flight stuff, but then it includes all of those early X-Men appearances, 109 and 120, 121. It's got the Machine Man appearance that Ditko drew that had Snowbird and Aurora and Northstar. It's got Marvel 2-in-1 issues, Incredible Hulk crossover issues. Good stuff.
So this is your continuing thing of them labeling something, and you'd be like, but that's not all the...
Yeah, but this kind of is. It's even got the X-Men Alpha Flight stuff. Those, you know, the Paul Smith and Art Adams. Right, wasn't it Art Adams? No, just Paul Smith. But good material.
Yeah. I got the classic trades from back in the day. I don't think I'm really tempted by an omnibus. I guess I was supposed to really like Alpha Flight. Like, that was one of those things. What, you're Canadian and you didn't buy Alpha Flight? I'm like, not really. It was always, like, one of those books where you're like, ooh, that's lower level type of stuff. But the book was, like, way, way long in the run when I ever noticed it. So it wasn't at the beginning.
How about those Jim Lee issues later on when he was early in his career? Did you read that stuff? That stuff looked pretty good.
That's weird that he was on that book.
The thing is, the characters are cool designs, so you get a good artist on them, and it's fun to see these characters moving around. Byrne designed them well.
I came to Alpha Flight, though, with that other late 90s series, with Thunderbolts and Heroes for Hire. Like, I was all over that Alpha Flight series. Which had the first appearance of Big Hero 6, funny enough.
Did it really? Is that where that was?
Yeah. So it's, I was just looking through my box. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have their first appearance. This is worth some money now.
Was that the Alpha Flight that had the masked, like, Weapon X person that ended up being Wild Child? Is that that one, or is that a different series? I forget all the different series.
Yeah, I think that might be a different series. Like, this was the one with Steven Seagal was writing.
Yeah. No, I think that is
that the one.
I think it is.
Hmm. I just remember getting most of the series. I didn't get the first issue, though, but I saw it, like, on a newsstand, like, out of town, and then it was sort of, like, ripped in the newsstand. I'm like, I'm not paying full price for it. And so, you know, I didn't get the first issue.
The early issues of the Marvel Star Wars, the first time around, get an epic collection. The first 23 issues of that. There's another printing of X-Men Wolverine Gambit that have some crossover material there, those two characters. Then there's a weird Doctor Strange collection here. It's called What Is It That Disturbs You, Steven?
I think they reprinted one of that story or one of those stories in like some prestige format or something in the 90s, because I remember seeing it on like some previews form or some catalog, and then I'm like, oh, that looks pretty interesting, but I like never pre-ordered it, never saw it on the newsstand. So I think there's multiple versions of like one of those stories.
Huh. It's art by P. Craig Russell, Tom Sutton, Mike Golden, Marshall Rogers, Sandy Plunkett, and Carmine Infantino. The Plunkett's got to be from the Marvel Fanfare stuff. Can't help but want to pick up another good collection of Doctor Strange stuff. It's been way too long in coming that we've been getting all this stuff reprinted.
Yeah. See, the movies are good for something.
X-Men Bishop's Crossing trade paperback collects the first appearances of Bishop when they revamped the X-Men and Uncanny X-Men and had the adjectiveless Claremont Lee X-Men title, and then Uncanny went over to Wils Portacio, who was writing and drawing the book. And it was crazy with all that Hellfire Club stuff and Bishop being the future cop from Uncanny X-Men 281 to 293.
That's before my time.
And Fitzroy and all that. Yeah. It was a hot mess is what it was.
So were you blue or gold? I don't remember who was on each team now.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think blue was the Lee team. And gold was Portacio. And they split up Scott and Jean, which was odd, between the two teams.
Yeah.
Man-Thing by Steve Gerber, The Complete Collection, Volume 2. It's the rest of the omnibus.
If you couldn't get in on that Omniboo stuff.
Volume 2 of a Thor epic collection gets released. Has stuff like the Absorbing Man's first appearance, and I think it's Hercules' first appearance is in there. Some good stuff from Thor 126 to 130, and the last 15 issues of Journey into Mystery.
This is probably like an omnibus or masterwork type of material.
Yep, I have him in the Masterworks.
Yeah.
An Avengers Epic Collection, also a Volume 2. This is issues 21 to 40, when Stan was off the book, got off the book, and Roy started. We get to see Ant-Man become Giant Man.
So you can replace all your soft cover Masterworks now with these.
Yeah, that's really what's happened. I mean, it used to be every month was coming out with those soft cover Masterworks, and I like the Epic Collections better, to be honest with you. But
yeah, they're more complete.
I liked the order of the other one, knowing, being able to see what was going to come out next, that kind of thing. They're reprinting some of the early Captain Britain material in Legacy of a Legend trade paperback, and that's going to have the Marvel team-up 65 and 66 with the Claremont Byrne and Herb Trimpe art. And then it's got the Hulk Weekly stuff from Marvel UK and Daredevils and Mighty World of Marvel and all that stuff when Alan Moore and Alan Davis were handling the character.
Aren't you supposed to say the original writer?
Huh. I have this omnibus and I have the special editions that were reprinted back in the 80s.
I think I have two hardcovers, but I don't know if it's of this material. Like, that Captain Britain stuff, I'm never, like, 100% sure if I have, like, the whole thing.
Captain Marvel by Jim Starlin, The Complete Collection. It's the other type of collections that Marvel has now besides the epic ones. The complete ones. And they seem to do it with the Starlin, because they've done it, The Complete Warlock. I just got The Complete Machine Man. That's going to be awesome.
You know, if they want to re-dip on this, they can just do the complete Starlin Cosmic Epic and include Captain Marvel and other stuff they've already done.
Yeah, this is going to be all of the Captain Marvel Starlin stuff, so it has even has the Marvel feature in the Iron Man where he's got the first appearance of Thanos. And it's got Marvel Graphic Novel number 1, The Death of Captain Marvel. It's all right here. All the good Captain Marvel stories. Except I like some of those green and white early stories of him with where he's still wearing like the Kree, you know, soldier armor.
Yeah.
But this is when it took off, when he became the protector of the universe and all that stuff and got all cosmic. Any others catch your eye?
I think that's about it. Unless I'm going to mention something modern.
Only if you really
well, not to. Super modern. Like, there's an Old Man Logan, like, reprinting.
Yeah, got it. I already have a collection of that.
Funny enough, I don't. I don't think I've ever read the story.
Hmm. Really?
Like, I know of the story.
That's good. It's, you know, it's Mark Miller without it being connected to the current continuity in a way that, like, pisses you off. So you get to have, like, the Mark Miller story and, like, all the fun and the twists and the turns and the way that he likes to, you know, spin a yarn with his story beats and his outcomes and everything, but you don't have to worry about it affecting anything. It's great.
Yeah. I don't know how they would do a movie of that. Like, that has all these different Marvel properties in it, so I guess you could sort of take the concept.
I can't believe they do a current title of it. I mean, that's so... I get it for doing it during the Secret Wars the way they did it. It was just a weird thing, but the fact that it's... I don't know.
Too many... Because you don't have a... like a male Wolverine going around.
Yeah.
So...
I thought that was the idea.
Anyway. But you want to get some of that Secret Wars craziness, I guess. Because, you know, why can't those titles just continue?
Well, like... some things I think, you know, deserve it, and other things I think it's just fun to have what we had there, and I don't know, some things you can't recreate, and there's just not room for it in some ways. Like, it's weird that I dig that Captain Marvel title, the current one with Carol Danvers, but I didn't really dig so much the A-Force. It felt forced to use a pun there. And even, like, the Weird World book. I mean, Weird World, I thought, was one of the best books of the Secret Wars stuff. Yet, the Weird World title, continuing on, even though it has the Del Mundo art, it's like, it's different characters.
Yeah.
And it's a different story. And to be honest, these characters and their quest, what their mission is, it's not as appealing as Archon just on the run trying to figure out which way is up, you know, and he's got the little cruddy map and he's trying to make it back to his beloved Polmacus, you know. That was a couple of different ideas really turned on their head. And here we've got an Earth girl who accidentally crashes. She's on her way flying in a like a puddle jumper plane to Mexico to bury her like abusive, alcoholic, suicidal mother's ashes to close the loop and kind of do something for this person who didn't really do enough for her. So it gets into all of that type of psychology. But she crashes in Weird World and she hooks up with a wizard who is in the form of this like Hellcat and this gargantuan warrior lady who's a wizard killer. So the wizard cat doesn't want to let on that he's the wizard because then he's afraid that the big Bertha lady is going to kill him. So, I mean, it has its angles to it, but it's just not... It seemed like a real step down from what Weird World was during Secret Wars. And thinking about the way I was kind of grading the all-new, all-different titles as I've been reading them, there's no shame in getting a C, because a C is just an average comic. And that's what I would give it. It's an average comic instead of something really amazing like it was before.
I think it was so surprising, too, with Chris Darr. We were like, how are we getting that? Does Marvel seriously?
Well, it is cool. They've explored more of Weird World. Like, we didn't get to see some of the parts of that map during the Secret Wars stuff, you know, but, and we get to here, which is kind of cool. But, you know, and again, it is the Del Mundo art, but I had hoped for something more. And I guess it's still there, so there's still room for more. Yeah. There were 6 issues of the title, and it ended. It was a 6-issue limited series.
When are they going to recapture Spider-Man 2099 and New Warriors, Steve? Ugh!
As long as they don't put them together.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of feel like Spider-Man 2099 was recaptured in Spider-Gwen. Like, that's how you would do a 2099.
Yeah.
Like she's bopping over to our world, but she's still in her world.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the, I think, essential elements that I really didn't see in Spider-Man 2099. Whereas he's just in our world, and I'm like, yeah, that's great.
The other Weird World book I also read, which is The Black Knight, and that ran 5 issues. And it's weird how they're doing... I mean, I like the fact that Marvel is trying to, at least in their appearance, operate outside the box with this all-new, all-different stuff. They are putting out titles that are basically just limited series.
Yeah, I think that one was...
And they're packaging them different ways.
Yeah, I think that one was more of a casualty. Like, something like Vision, like 12 issues, like that seems like a story. Black Knight seems like it should have gone on longer.
Well, Vision might have gone on if it wasn't for the creator...
Yeah.
Going over, getting an exclusive with DC. But, Black Knight, there's room for this series to go on. I liked it. I gave it a solid B. I thought it was a better than average book. It's a pretty good redemption tale. Or is it? Because he doesn't really redeem himself. And I've always, admittedly, had a soft spot for Dane Whitman. I just think he's always been a fun supporting character. And I even liked his glory days when he led the brown flak jacket outfitted Avengers. What was that? Harris Epting time there? Those were good Black Knight stories. And this has him just... I mean, we saw a glimpse of it in that point one issue, but he is just... Was it a point one issue, or was it one of the tie-in frontline type stories that they did along with one of the last... events? But either way, it shows him, he's really eroding. Like, the ebony blade is just sucking his soul, and he's like a junkie almost, you know. And he retreats to Weird World and is chased by like the Avengers and the Marvel heroes and stuff, and he ultimately has to prove that he's the man for the job to be left as the caretaker of the ebony blade, and it takes someone else grabbing it and totally falling apart immediately to show that, yeah, Whitman's, you know, looks like he's been out to sea for way too far too long, but someone else would look even worse. It was an interesting story, and he ends up being the ruler of Avalon on Weird World when all is said and done, which certainly leaves the door open for more stories.
Well, it seems like characters are still traveling to Weird World, so maybe they'll show up somewhere else.
I like that the Squadron Supreme went to Weird World for a couple of issues. And I'd give that arc, although it was average, I enjoyed it in that it kind of opened up some possibilities to me. Like, I was thinking, how cool would it be if these guys, the Squadron Supreme, who are, as we know, analogs for the Justice League, if they were stuck in Weird World and that was their ongoing series, like their series is merged and that's how the Weird World moves on as the backdrop for the Squadron Supreme, and they were getting all high and mighty. I haven't read the most recent storyline of their book, having reported on it a few episodes ago on Marvel Noise. But I thought it would have been cool to have them in their height of starting to go bad and starting to take over and it really establish themselves and learning way too much, way too quick about how our world and who are all our heroes are and their characters and how they interact and stuff enough to be able to start manipulating and taking advantage from the shadows and stepping out into the forefront. How cool would it would be at that point of their steps in their plan and their grand plan to, you know, make the world a better place, to whisk them away to Weird World and have them just, again, not knowing which way is up and struggling to get some footing. And having the fun of it also being, like, meta of having it be our versions of the DC characters not able to really survive and being constantly turned on their heads in the Marvel Universe. That would be really cool. But that isn't what we got. Instead, we got Warrior Woman turning traitor and sort of switching with Thundra. Thundra, the old Fantastic Four, Ben Grimm pal, has now joined the Squadron Supreme.
Maybe they just need a certain character to show up with styling white boots and a Liberator machine or something. You know what I mean?
Works for me. One of the other titles I read was Scarlet Witch, which is written by James Robinson. And have you checked this title out at all, Kevin? Every issue is drawn by a different artist.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I'm aware that it has a different makeup. Like, it's not just arc to arc or whatever. Like, they have a different artist every issue, which is kind of interesting.
It's an ongoing arc, but it feels like done in ones visually, but they're not really done in one stories necessarily. And Robinson, you know, he knows the continuity, right? He's proven that over and over again. But I still would just give the book a C. It's not really doing anything special for me. Witchcraft is broken. You know? Magic is broken. We've been there before.
What? Doctor Strange story?
But witchcraft here is broken, and every time Wanda casts a spell, she gets older. So don't you want to read a story with old Scarlet Witch? And her spirit guide, her, like, mentor guide, is the dead spirit of Agatha Harkness.
That's decent.
And there's a quest she's on that seems like it's leading her to her mother. Which, are they going to mess around more with this whole lineage thing? Which, that could be frustrating. But issue 8 was the best of the first 8 issues that I read. Wanda is giving a confession to a psychiatrist. And she's, you know, in therapy, and this therapist seems to be leading her in certain directions. And it's hard to tell until the end, but Wanda is actually on top of the situation. And the therapist is actually Maynard Talbot. Mm. Do you know who that is? It's the Ringmaster!
I was thinking maybe it was Master Pandemonium or something.
Yeah. Oh, that would be bad. She would flip. but that was a good issue because, you know, there's a whole style of writing those, like, confessional type issues.
Yeah.
You know, and this is one of the well done ones. I think one of the first ones I remember really done well like that was back when in the old X Factor, Peter David, where they had the famous, like, debriefing issues where after the mission they're kind of each talking and giving their, being psychologically assessed and that stuff, and that was clever. And it was really done well here, even though it's just Wanda and the therapist back and forth. But still, just a C title. I'll stick with it, though, and see where it's going. The big investment of time in the last few weeks that I've spent was reading the cosmic books. I just jumped right in and got right into all the titles. Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians of Infinity, Rocket and Groot, Star-Lord, Drax, Venom Space Knight, and the Silver Surfer.
That's a lot.
It is. I read the first 5 issues of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's the first arc. of which the best part, I gotta say, is the Art Adams covers.
Those are nice covers.
There's this whole subplot building that I assume they've gotten to by now, but we'll see, where Annihilus and the Brood Queen are plotting a move that will potentially earn them the galaxy. And, you know, with this whole all-new, all-different world, it has that eight-month delay. That is the thing that really bothers me the most about the whole all-new, all-different is, you know, when you there shouldn't be story that... If you've been reading all along, it's very awkward to have there be all this story and history that is this makes you jump in as if you haven't been reading Marvel Comics. And that's the way where that this stuff feels like the soft reboot boot at times.
It's just a jump forward.
The Thing here is on the team from the Fantastic Four, which is cool. You know, he was a pilot and he always wanted to see the stars and all that stuff. Although he's
Battle World.
Done that plenty over the years as the Thing. And the team now is Kitty Pryde, the Thing, Rocket Raccoon, Groot, Drax, Venom Space Knight, and Gamora. And Peter Quill is on Spartax being, well, he's bored out of his mind being the emperor of the planet. And Kitty and Peter are on the outs. Remember, they were, like, professing their love and gonna, like, they seemed like they were engaged practically, right?
Yeah.
They're on the outs, and we don't know why, and they just keep referring to, like, that they are apart now. And that something happened. And it's like, well, that's the kind of character that seems like a cheat to me. but the Guardians need Peter Quill's resources, so even though they don't like him, which I don't understand, they're going to go visit him. And while they're there on Spartax, they're attacked by Hala, who's this female Kree accuser who claims to be the last of the Kree. Because Hala was destroyed along with the entire Kree culture, apparently, even though they're an empire. Would they? Everything was just on Hala for some
that
reason?
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And there's a battle with the Chitauri thrown in there because they're just the obligatory space thugs now, you know, when you just need some aliens to kick around.
Yeah.
And this Hala warrior fights the Guardians for, like, the next four issues. And then in issue number five, Yotat, the self-proclaimed destroyer of destroyers, shows up to take down Drax. And Hala's still kicking around. And we do get to see the Guardians of Nowhere. I mean, the Guardian... they're not called that. They're the Nowhere Corps. That's what they are. And that is... former Guardians, Mantis, Bug, Moondragon, and Cosmo, and some other guy who I didn't recognize.
It's not, what's that guy's name? The Flag guy?
Jack Flag?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I thought he got his cosmic destiny and he's leading that team.
Wouldn't that be great? So the Guardians get reunited. Peter Quill comes back to the Guardians after this first five issues because he's has to... jump ship from Spartak, and I don't know. This 8 month gap is a problem to me. I give the
you're not supposed to know the things that happen though. It's an 8 month gap.
Yeah, but I've been reading every issue. Now the Star-Lord series, it seems like it's concluded after eight issues. It seemed like that was only an eight issue series also, and
it's coming back.
Is it? Because the way that it ended, they seemed like it was you now follow Star-Lord's adventures in Guardians of the Galaxy. So I wasn't sure, and I haven't seen it solicited. So,
yeah, right. I think because the creator went to DC.
Oh, Stan Humphries.
They sort of wrapped that one. They sort of wrapped that one up.
Is that right? Is that Stan Humphries? You mean? He writes Star-Lord well. He wrote his last volume good. Here the problem is it's a five-issue arc and a three-issue arc. And the first five-issue arc, I just have a real problem with. Although I'm sure it's editorially driven. It totally retcons Peter Quill's youth, his adolescence, and his young adulthood and how he became Star-Lord. It's like a secret new origin of sorts. It's like not a badly crafted tale or told tale. It just totally spits in the face of the character's continuity to include movie elements. Now we have young Peter Quill coming of age with the space pirate Yondu, you know, with the amputated fin and everything, looking like the movie so, one.
Well, yeah, yes. But that's not the Yondu Yondu.
It's not our Yondu from the
I know.
Future Guardians, but like he's blue and he's from Centauri and his name is Yondu. It's lame.
Yeah, I thought Bendis had already done some like rewriting of Star-Lord. They needed some more rewriting, I guess.
Then there are three. The second arc goes from issues 6 to 8, and it focuses on Kitty and Peter coming to terms with each other post-breakup that we never saw, in an adventure with the Collector, who totally is the movie version of the Collector.
But isn't the Collector basically the Collector? Like, unless they say, oh, he's not collecting now, like, I don't know.
He was being, like, almost a weird game show host that was just being used as a way to have Peter and Kitty, like, as if he cares why they broke up or what they care about each other, and he's all drawing reactions out of them about each other as if he really is the inquiring mind that wants to know. It was unenjoyable. I give it a C though, because it's not poorly told tales. I just don't like them. The first 5 issues of the Drax series, which is written by CM Punk and Cullen Bunn. It has Drax splitting off from the group when no one wants him to tag along on their various, like, solo quests and adventures and time off. So he's like, all right, I guess I'll go kill Thanos. So he's off to go kill Thanos, and he's on this, like, cruddy little ship to go off and kill Thanos. He doesn't know how he's going to go about doing that, but he's gonna, because that's what Drax is supposed to do. And the ship crashes, and he's marooned on this unknown planet. But he manages to find a town and a bar, and encounters who he thinks he's going to have to do battle with, but ends up being his ultimate drinking buddy, Terax, the former Herald of Galactus. And Terax has been dead for a while, but his resurrection is at least slightly explained, because he was killed by the Phoenix Force, and he's saying, you know, Phoenix, life, all that stuff.
What? That's what I was saying during that whole AVX thing.
So Drax helps this chick on the planet who's a resident there, who's a mechanic who can help fix his ship by busting some heads for her and going on a mission. And he turns out that it's to help some kids who were, like, kidnapped. And he's like, well, now that I know about this, I can't let it go anyway. And then Terax gets his axe stolen, and then they have to go get that. Oh, and did I mention, Kevin, there's a face-off with Fin Fang Foom?
You mean the real deal?
First, they fight in Foom's gladiator ring in issue 4.
What?
Against Torgo, the living robot from Fantastic Four 91, way back in 1969. It's awesome.
Huh.
And then issue 5 wraps up the first arc and has Drax, Terax, and Torgo against Fin Fang Foom.
I guess he got tired of cooking the food on Earth.
This is one of the most straightforward action-adventure stories I've seen out of all new, all different Marvel. I give it a good solid B. This is a very entertaining book. I like Drax's supporting cast that's being developed here between Terax and Torgo and this female mechanic. It's a good book. The art is a little kinetic, but I can look past it because it's fun storytelling. It's Cullen Bunn and CM Punk. Venom Space Knight, I'm 10 issues in on that. And that gives us the solo spacefaring adventures of Flash Thompson and his Venom symbiote, which now, Kevin, has had its evil purged from it, supposedly, in the Guardians of the Galaxy Planet of the Symbiote storyline.
Those symbiotes were so misunderstood.
Yeah. I'll tell you, though, not a bad book here. I'm not sure if I really give it a C+ or if it really earns itself a B. Written by Robbie Thompson. It's got a sharp script. The plots are pretty straightforward, and the art, at least for the first chunk of issues, is by Ariel Olivetti. And he does some cool aliens, and he does a good Venom. The first ish has Flash picking up a servant robot sidekick who sticks around and ends up being integral to the storytelling. And he meets these, like, alien space knights. They're agents of the cosmos, and learns that he's being tested, and that, like, some of the other agents of the cosmos wear symbiotes, too. It's really weird. And it's weird. It's by the end of the third ish, he learns that his symbiote, now that the symbiote has been cleansed, can exist separate from him. So it's like sitting opposite, like, the table from him and talking to him and stuff for short periods of time, like an hour. It can exist separate from him. He's like, well, why didn't you ever do this before? And he's like, well, I couldn't do it until now. So it's like Flash meet Venom, Venom, Flash. And now they're talking to each other a little bit, like, while they're on missions, too. Which is weird. So there's some
this
of that.
Is like Captain Marvel, where that's one the, of them's
exactly.
in the...
That's the first thing that I thought. And but it also yeah. has that Deathlok pewter angle, too, a little bit, you know? It's awkward, but now they're, like, more of a team, because there's these two separate consciousnesses. The pair gets attacked by this panda alien killer, and they end up fighting in an arena, and then Flash helps the panda rescue her cub, and now they become part of Venom's supporting cast that he's also developing, similar to the Drax situation, and I like it here, too. By issue 6, though, the Venom symbiote is starting to lose its control, and it goes wild and rogue. And then other agents of the cosmos want to, like, sanction Venom. And Flash is stuck in this tough spot where he's, like, defending Venom because he doesn't want it killed. But he's also having to protect himself from it and other people from it the best he can. And sort of try to assert some more control over it, or at least a partnership. So it's a pretty interesting book. It's solid.
You know, that Flash Thompson Venom first appearance goes crazy now. Like, no real reason. Like, there's always rumors about movies and everything, but...
You mean first appearance, like, back in the Lee Ditko time?
No! Flash Thompson Venom.
Oh, Flash Thompson Venom.
Yeah, like the slot Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh. Yeah, that was one of my other things. We were joking a few episodes ago about reboot things that we didn't like and that One More Day thing, and that was the other... angle that was weird of Flash kind of losing all of his personality, it seemed, and getting into all that dark space stuff. That was a little, it's been hard to swallow, but at least they stuck him out in outer space. The Rocket Raccoon and Groot series, I read the first 8 issues and I really wasn't digging it at all. I give it a D. It's less, not as good as the average book. After the 8-month gap, Rocket and Groot have disappeared, so then they have to be found and rediscovered, or not. But don't despair, Kevin, because the Guardians of Infinity book, that's a good book. You're going to have to read this one.
I guess I should have been reading it.
It's Dan Abnett returning to write some more Guardians tales, Kevin.
Oh, man.
This time it's an 8-issue series.
Like, I feel like there was a brief period where I wasn't reading any of his stuff, like, after the... You know, it was always, like, Abnett with Lanning, so... I don't know, there was, like, a weird period there where I wasn't reading anything from either of them, and now I seem to be reading a lot from Dan Abnett.
Well, this is an 8-issue series... The arc is called Millennium, and it's complete arc there, and definitely worth picking up. It's brings together some of the current Guardians, Rocket Raccoon, Groot, and Drax. The original Guardians, now revamped as the Guardians 3000 in their last series there. It's Charlie 27, the new Nikki, Martin X, and Vance Astro, complete with Cap's shield.
Hmm.
And they meet another team of these 5... Guardians that are the Guardians 1000, they're dubbed as. And they're called Sky Tower, Al-Hassan, Astrolab, Tun Zan, who is a Regilian, and their leader, Stella Nega. And they all meet on this interdimensional structure that seemingly has no end. And they've all entered via, like, a doorway in their own time dimension. They have to face off against hordes and hordes of these armored warriors called the Newcomers. They're kind of like the Borg, except they overcome you by just, like, swarming you and then assimilate you into one of them. And they've been doing it to planet after planet across time in each of these different time periods. So these three teams of Guardians unite, and some of, like, one of each of them gets turned. So then they're all invested. They eventually encounter the god of these newcomers, Hermeticus, who wears this suit of armor, Kevin, that houses various great brains that he's encountered and taken out of the bodies, and he's tapping them for their information and multitasking ability. So his, like, forearm has a big, like, glass bubble on it with a brain floating in it, and his upper arm, same thing, and, like, his head has an extra brain, and his legs and all these his limbs, he's got brains all over him floating in stasis.
It's weird.
He decides, instead of killing Rocket Raccoon, he's going to take Rocket's brain because Rocket's a tactical genius, don't you know? But that proves part of his downfall. Rocket assumes control of one of his arms and he's, like, punching himself in the face, like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? And there's, like, some history between Hermeticus and Stella Nega, who is the leader of these Guardians 1000. And it all ends up being, it's all well and good. It's an excuse for Vance Astro and Charlie 27 to be in some more action here. It's a solid B+, almost an A book. If it was an ongoing, I might give it an A. It's a solid B+. The other interesting thing about the book is that it's not really a split book, but the backup stories aren't really backups either. There are these lead stories are either 14 or 15 pages each, but so are the backups.
Weird.
And the backups are just like a couple of the Guardians off on a solo tale. The first issue is The Thing and Rocket by Jason Latour and Jim Chung, and then Drax and Rocket by Robbie Thompson and Jim Chung. There's The Thing and Groot, written by Daryl DMC McDaniels. Venom and Human Torch, written by Jerry Dugan. Kitty Star-Lord and Rocket. Kitty Star-Lord and Gamora. There's an origin of these new Space Knights that are popping up here, written by Robbie Thompson.
So I guess they didn't want to use the Darkhawks that were supposed to be like Guardians of the Universe.
Right? And
I don't blame them if they don't want to use that. Yeah, that's okay.
And at the end, there's a story with Rocket and both Star-Lords. So why not get this series, right? That you're getting two 14-page stories, so you're getting a bigger book, and you're getting, you know, Guardians 3000 stuff in the opening, and then these various tales that are told by some pretty good creators in the backups. Guardians of Infinity. I thought of you as I was reading these books, Kevin. You would enjoy them.
So is that all in one trade, you think?
I can't imagine. Unless they might. What if they split it?
Yeah.
I could see them doing that, but it could easily fit in. I mean, it's just 8 issues.
Yeah. Unless they want those solo stories, you know, off on their own for some reason.
They could. Guardians Team Up, Volume 3.
Yeah.
And the last of the cosmic books for me this time around is The Silver Surfer, which I read the first 5 issues of, continuing the creative team of the last volume, Dan Slott and Mike and Laura Allred on the art. This isn't as good as the first series yet. It's still pretty good. It's still got that stiff but groovy, colorful Allred art that I very much like. And there's like lots of inside jokes and meta moments that show that both the artist and the writer really know their Marvel history and stuff. There's this one situation where the Surfer has destroyed traces of Zenla's culture, including in any print that exists. And there's this kid who's like really ticked off at the Surfer. And he's reading comic books. And he's got all these Fantastic Four comics. And the Surfer's like, well, what's the matter? And he's like, you're ruining the Fantastic Four. And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, in the comic, the problem is references to Zenla are being destroyed, so the Fantastic Four comic is ceasing to exist. And he's like, because of what you're doing, they don't make them anymore. They don't make the Fantastic Four comic anymore. And it was just, it was a fun meta way to join my gripe in Marvel's turning their backs on the FF right now. In these five issues, the Surfer and Dawn, his travel companion, return to Earth, reunite and reassimilate with Dawn's family in Maine, and they fight off an invasion of the culture of Zenla itself, led by Shalabal, who's the big bad, and she's got the Thing as her mind control thrall. It's like really crazy. The fifth issue, though, Kevin, has the Surfer go to the moon. And he's seeking out the Watcher to get some answers.
But he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, because remember, the Surfer was not in this dimension when the Secret Wars was going on. He got a taste of what was going on with Doom and stuff, but he really was kind of off planet, if you will, while all this was happening to the cosmos. So the Watcher isn't there, and he finds this robed, chained, but surprisingly mobile character, the Fallen, who doesn't reveal his identity of that he's Nick Fury to the Surfer. But he ends up helping the Surfer out just the same with some cryptic advice and words of wisdom. But it's interesting. I think it's the first time we've seen him since the Jason Aaron event there.
Original scene?
Yeah. You know, even with all of the Winter Soldier being the man on the wall and that stuff, we haven't seen Fury again, have we?
Yeah, I guess not.
So he's still up there with no shoes on and looking like he's something out of A Christmas Carol.
Hmm.
But I give the Surfer it still gets a B for me. It's still a better than average book. But it could be better. So that's the cosmic books. What do you think? All new, all different?
Cosmic was kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah. That's the problem. It seems like everything is very disjointed and shaken up, and no one's telling just solid stories with the characters, except for maybe the Venom Space Knight and the Drax books. Silver Surfer as well. But as far as the Guardians world, I think they need to do something about it and shore that up. And
yeah.
And having the 8-month gap did not help them at all, because they were already seeming fractured just by being pulled in so many directions. If it's not the events, but being shoehorned into the crossover with the X-Men and the Angela thing that they were used as the vehicle for bringing her into the Marvel Universe and all that stuff. And it just seems like, why don't you just tell some Guardian stories? Can you just do that?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to say, why don't you just tell some stories where the Guardians are together and saving people and everything?
Yeah, or do something, or aren't on the outs, or split apart, or I don't know. But there's good books out there to be had, and I'm doing my best to catch up on all of them as I try to get everywhere I can up to the point of the Civil War book so that I can get into that storyline before it wraps up and the ramifications of it are so present that even I can't ignore them.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to get caught up on that Thunderbolts book.
I think I'm just one issue behind.
Oh, okay.
Still not digging the art.
Yeah, that's... I didn't realize that... that reading it month to month, that, you know, I'm like, oh, it's all right. And then I see more of it, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm feeling less and less excited by the art as time goes on.
Now, you and Andrew both laughed at me in recent episodes where I kind of have been saying that there were so many interesting successes in the Marvel Now era that preceded Secret Wars. There were so many unique books that had their own looks and their own feels where it seemed like Marvel was really experimenting, and it was some really cool stuff. Then we get Secret Wars, where they go full out into experimentation land, right, with all the titles.
Yeah.
And now coming back, instead of going back to what I would call more straightforward, solid Marvel Universe storytelling, it seems like all of the books are, and I guess aptly titled, all new, all different. It seems like everything's a stretch book rather than there being, you know, these core titles that are solid and then having a few fringe books doing their weird stuff. It seems like all the books are doing their weird stuff, and the 8-month gap just adds to it. I just am having trouble getting my footing just because it seems like everything, even though it didn't start over, these are the same characters. They lived some of that time, but we're not privy to it, I can't help but keep using the word awkward, because it really is. And I think, even though you teased me about having that intense of a reaction to the all-new, all-different stuff, you know, you're reading a lot more DC books. It's not just because they relaunched, but you're finding books that you can live without in the Marvel universe right now.
The thing is, I'm not reading any less Marvel books.
No?
So
then why aren't you reading Guardians of Infinity?
That wasn't that a $4.99 book? So that's really bad. If it was just a $4.99 book, like, maybe, because, you know, there's extra pages,
right,
or
it's 30
whatnot.
Pages a story.
But I also have the exchange rate to worry about. So when you're adding like an extra dollar or two on top of that, like, $6-$7 book, I'm like, just
fair.
Like,
enough.
You gotta have, I don't know who you have to have on that book. Like, it's a tough sell.
Fair enough.
But I feel like I missed out on, like, I wanted to check it out, and then you have all these other options and everything, and I'm like, I gotta go with something else.
That's what,
like, I never expected to be like in love with that Spider-Woman book, and I'm like, once that's, like, found out that was my thing, I'm like, I gotta add this right away.
That feels like the new Superior Spider-Foes in some way. Not that the content is the same in any way, but as far as the itch it's scratching for me. You know?
And
it's,
yeah.
It's that street-level book, the good characterization, good supporting cast, revealing and humorous moments in the interactions and stuff, and just being... I'm taken away on a story that you really don't know which way it's going, and just entertained by it.
I also felt that for an X-Men book, the all-new X-Men type of thing with the, you know, the time-displaced X-Men and the new Wolverine.
That's not...
Like, I thought that was pretty interesting, too. And, for an X book, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is kind of my X book type of thing.
That's not next on my hit list, but it's next after next.
Next after next.
Next on my hit list is picking up. I got to catch up on some of the like individual and solo titles, and Ant-Man, and a few other books, the Hawkeye book, and some of the things that have slipped through the cracks. And I'll get there. All right, Kevin. Thanks. Let's get Andrew in here and hear about San Diego Comic-Con, and then I'm going to call you back, so we can do the Thunderbolts.
Alright.
We gotta do
issue
100.
I'll probably complain about the Thunderbolts some more.
What a complainy episode of Marvel Noise this is.
I know.
Well, Marvel Noise listeners, Super Steve and I are here gathered around the proverbial fireplace to chat a little 2016 San Diego Comic-Con.
Was I supposed to go?
Wait, yeah, I thought we were going to compare and contrast our experiences in San Diego.
Well, you'll have to tell me about it then.
This was San Diego is its own strange, wonderful, maddening beast. And while Marvel Noise isn't sponsored by anyone, I am going to give some shout-outs. It's reached a point now where it's very suggested that you go in with a crew and a team and resources. As it stands, we've been able to get passes now these last few years, but they're really hard to get. We go under our own steam. We're not under a media pass or anything. We're under, and we might be taking a break. It's just between the, it's a process that takes 6 months. You know, you start getting tickets, then there's this draw for hotels, and like every, if you're doing parking, there's a draw for that. There's at least three side conventions, Nerdist, Nerd HQ, Con X. Like there's all these, it's become an entirely overwhelming experience in a way. I mean, it's still loads of fun, but just getting there is literally half the battle.
Well, it sounds like you have to be on top of these different variables. Otherwise, any one of them, if the thing doesn't...
Right.
If it falls through, it's going to really mess everything else up.
Yes.
All of a sudden, the house of cards...
You have tickets and no hotel.
Yeah. Or no parking.
Or vice versa. Yeah. You're all... It's all in, and it really requires a lot of... You know, because there's pools of things, and you make alliances, and you help... And it just really... So I wanted to give a big shout out to the SDCC unofficial blog. Just aside from being really nice people, if you get a chance to interact with them as a resource, they have everything on their website, like all the signings, all the appearances, all the everything. And I went to their website a lot. The other one is Sean Marshall and Carmel Parks and Cons. They have a website. They have a Twitter handle. They work with the blog too. Those are your two key resources because they just run so much information before, during, and after the show that it really helps. Plus, they're also just really fun people to interact with. And that's the big part of these shows is seeing people, like seeing the experience too, but it's also sharing that experience with your friends and meeting up with, I have another crew that I meet with. And that's always my top thing is the time I spend with my crew hanging out, doing, seeing the things. And we split up at different points, you know, oh, I wanted to see this panel. Oh, I'm going to the floor. Oh, I'm going to this side. There's so many side. Two of our crew went to this brew fest. You had to buy an extra ticket and they had this whole like special Comic-Con themed brewery event where they brewed special beers and everything.
Nice.
Like that's just one of the tiny parts of Comic-Con, and it starts Wednesday night and goes through Sunday. So some of the Marvel specific panels, I did go see Howard Chaykin talk. Do you ever see him, Steve?
I've met him a couple of times and ridden an elevator with him that was quite entertaining, hearing his description of the cosplayers that were coming on and off. and certainly read a lot of interviews and stuff, and I appreciated particularly there was a recent Art of Ramona Freyden book where he was the interviewer rather than the interviewee, and it just ends up being a big conversation between him and Ramona that is fantastic. So I like Chaykin both as a artist, a writer, and as just what his place in comics history is and all the good stories he's got from all the people he's come across. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's a straight talker. The one thing
that's
I
for
probably
sure
could have skipped was he ends his panel by singing a song.
Oh, boy.
That's one of those ones, but he talks about a lot about how he's pretty critical of his own work, particularly his older work. He's really unhappy with it. And it's so ironic that IDW reissued that Marvel Star Wars artist edition that features his work that he really hates. So a lot of his spotlight, and there was no other interview, it was just him with a microphone in front of the podium walking around taking questions and talking, and but it just made me laugh that like the thing he's least happy with is the thing that he, and he admits it, he's like, look, to most, there's maybe 250,000 people that read comics in the US, and maybe for 50,000 of them that know my name, half of them or two-thirds of them know me for this Star Wars book that I, if he knew it was going to be that successful, he would have worked harder on it. But it was just funny that, I mean, how many times have people come up with him and they have the special artist version and he signs them? Like, it just, so I got him to sign my copy of Star Reach.
Oh, cool.
It's not a Marvel book, but, and I felt kind of bad because I'm like, oh, he just talked about how much he hates his older work. And what do I have? Like, one of his older works. But, he's a good guy. He's like, look, I don't put down, you enjoy it how much you enjoy it, but I don't, and, you know, you're getting out of it what you get out of it. I get out of it something different. So a classy guy in general. All in all, a fun panel. He was also on That 70s panel, which is a Mark Evanier style panel where he has him and Paul Levitz and a few other that era. Len Wein, I think, or maybe it was Marv Wolf. No, I think it was Len. You know, that kind of, and they talk about their first gigs and getting into the business and it was kind of fun watching those guys all. Oh, Paul Glacy showed up for a little bit.
Oh, cool.
And they talked about how the scene kind of started in New York and really expanded. Those are the guys, especially Glacy's a little bit younger than them, started moving to different, you know, Detroit, where your boy Starlin, I think, came out of, and Pittsburgh, that's where Glacy and a few other people came out of. The Howard the Duck artist, I think, was in Pittsburgh, too.
Myrick.
Yeah. Because he met Merrick's girlfriend. That's how he got into comics, because she introduced him to Merrick. So it was just, it's kind of neat hearing some of the history of that from those guys themselves. Probably my most interesting thing was I went to the Eisners this year.
Oh.
We got invites to the My Comic Shop table. Ironically enough, I bought most of the Thunderbolts issues that I did the segments for My Comic Shop. And a friend of a friend met one of the people that owns it or runs it, and he invited some of us to join their table for the Eisners. So it was really, it's really fun seeing like a lot more people show up and accept the reward than you might think.
Cool.
I mean, there were some, not like, there was one guy and they mentioned like, oh, he lives in Spain, so that's why he's not here. But Dan Slott and the Allreds won for their issue, the single issue of Silver Surfer, the one, I think we talked about it. It's like a loop.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember that one. I think it's 13 in the new run. And the Allreds were there. And just, it's really nice to see people have genuine emotions. And like, some people really like the, like Linda Barry and Matt Groening were both inducted into the Hall of Fame. And Linda Barry had a great speech. And she was just really, like, it's nice when people appreciate these things. And you can kind of be there and share that moment. And Congressman Lewis was there for March Book 3. They won an award, and some of our group met him as we were leaving and shook his hand. And yeah, it was just like a really, I don't know, I'm really glad I got a chance to go and be part of that. And I'm glad people, I mean, some people are more flip, but really people take it seriously, which was nice to see. You know, I wasn't sure if some people were going to be like, oh, who cares, you know, awards are silly or whatever. But it was a nice, and Barrowman was our MC, and he wore all these weird, he came out dressed as Squirrel Girl one time, and then Harley Quinn.
Yeah, should we complete the tour and go to the Harveys in Baltimore?
Maybe I'll have to try that out. yeah, and then I did go to a Marvel only, the Marvel Unlimited Plus panel. If you remember, you get to go to a special panel where they give you a few comic books and show you, talk about what's coming out and show you clips from like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and like some of the tryout reels and blooper reels and stuff coming up. Like, spoiler alert, Ghost Rider's coming to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Cool, Johnny Blaze, right? No.
I don't know which version, but...
No, it's the Robbie Rees. It's the recent...
Okay. Because, to be honest with you, that has the new car, right?
Yeah, he turned the car into the Ghost Rider-y car, so I wonder what it's going to be on the show.
Yeah, I kind of zone... I mean, you know, I watch that... I don't... What I really don't get about those panels is the weird embargo thing. Like, it's 2016. Not that... Like, all this news is going to come out in a week or when they release it, but they're like, please, you know, put your phones... And I'm like, there's only like five people that care. Like, if I tweet that, like, this artist is going to appear, you know, and I just don't get embargoes. And I think it made sense back when the internet wasn't so ubiquitous and everything, but it just feels like really you're embargoing news. It's not like something that's also going to be held embargoed forever. It's embargoed for probably a week or 2 weeks, but all these panels, and I always comply, like it's their rules. I'll not tweet or take pictures, but I just don't know why they, I think controlling the message at this point, it's free publicity, you know, but I don't know.
Maybe they want you to feel like it's more special. You know?
Yeah, and we're the only... Well, what really made me laugh was a local NPR reporter I've met a few times, Mike Rowe, was at it. And he was tweeting about... He's like, I'm at the Marvel Believers panel, and they showed this. And I was like, whoa, they showed that at the Unlimited. And he's like, yeah, it's the same panel. They changed the name. I'm like, I guess I'm not really as much of a fan. I didn't keep track of the name change of the panel, so... Poor Andy, not really following. And I went and bought the... they change things up every year. So this year they decided not to do advanced ticketing for Hasbro on Saturday. And the line wasn't too bad, so I got in line and I ended up buying the 3¾ collector pack from San Diego.
Wow.
So I got... That's the one that has the collector and Lockjaw and Moon Boy and Cosmo and all the little... I looked at the 6-inch cool. Legends. It was the vault thing, but none of them really... I ended up getting, as a gift, the Abomination one from it, because I helped the guy from Parks and Cons. It was way too nice to me. But it was a lot. It was like $125 for 6 figures, which isn't bad, but a lot of them just didn't grab me. I don't know if you saw what the figures looked like.
Yeah.
But I was like, none of them are that... But the 3¾ was a lot cheaper. I'm like, yeah, it's cool to have Lockjaw and all these kind of fun. And I like the packaging.
I have
Plus,
the rest
it's easier
of the
to carry.
There's no Lockjaw, but I have the other Inhumans, you know, the Triton and Karnak and everybody but Gorgon and Crystal.
As of Saturday or Sunday morning, I think they still had them. So they go on sale August 9th. So you can go to Hasbro. I don't know the procedure for that, but whatever they don't sell out of. I think it's like every other year it seems to sell out. I think they have trouble gauging how much, because last year I remember thinking about buying that Book of Visanchi figs, but they sold out quickly. So this year, they might have sold out by the end of Sunday, I don't know, but they were still there as of early Sunday. So, yeah, if you want those figs, go to Hasbro on August 9th, if this thing comes out in time. But it was really, like, San Diego is kind of a special thing. But it's so maddening and crazy and money and time and sweat and blood that you feel like you've really fought the wars out of it. And then suddenly it's over. Like you blink your eyes and it's Sunday late and you're having dinner and then you're driving back and going back to work early the next day. And you've been through this whirlwind experience of this craziness of that is all these different offsites and everything. And yeah, but really it's the teamwork thing now. Like, if you want those exclusives, I mean, you can be like me where you just stumble across stuff and take it. Or you can be like, if you really are planning to get the stuff, because the Star Wars stuff sold out. I did get the Kylo Ren without the helmet and the little Darth Vader helmet. Yeah. I did get one of them. That did sell out, but I got in line before it had sold out. So, yeah, and there was, you could see Stan there. I didn't go to any of his panels or anything, but I enjoy seeing him. It'll be kind of sad when Stan stops going to them things.
Yeah, he's doing his last East Coast appearances last year and this year. This is going to be his last New York Comic Con and his last, Rhode Island thing and his last New Jersey and there everything's his last this and his last that.
I would say San Diego, if you can go, it's unlike anything else, but it really is pretty overwhelming. It's a lot of money, and it's not something you can just kind of do without planning, which is kind of a downer. I mean, it makes it kind of fun. It makes you feel like you earned it, but you really, like, if you just go and wing it, you'll have fun, but you'll really be, you'll miss more, and it's tough because you can get caught. Something catches your eye, and you try and get in a line, and you find out that you missed it or the line's too, you can really get swamped a little bit if you're not careful. the line for offsites was huge. I think Game of Thrones, you had to wait like 4 hours to get in, and we did that last year, and it's not worth it.
It's just gotten too big, too crowded, like New York. Yeah. I prefer the somewhat smaller con where you can still focus more of your resources, both your time, energy, and money on actually scoring loot and art and prints and things that you can only get at the con, sketchbooks, etc.
Well, I will say you can still get Choi, the art dealer. Isn't that the guy's Albert Moy? Mm-hmm. That's the, not Choi, Moy. A friend of mine picked up 2 pages off of him.
Nice.
During the show, dropped a pretty good chunk of change. Well, for my money, it's a lot of money. In the original art world, it's not a lot of money. But, so that was fun. I do like going. Yeah, it's still a great place for, like, back issue and original art and that type of thing. But I don't really mess with that in this kind of serious way. Like, I'm not going to be dropping, you know, 4 or 5 figures on any thing anytime soon. Unless things change.
But it sounds like it was if it is to be your last San Diego Comic-Con for a while, it sounds like you guys had a good time and made your rounds and made sure that it was just as good as all the other experiences that you remember being fun there, so that you could have another notch on your staff of power.
Yes, and plenty that I also have in the independent realm that maybe we'll have to see for our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, as a cheap little promo. While I'm throwing in plugs left and right for all these other people, I throw in a plug for Indie Comic Book Noise.
There you go. Show the love. Show the love.
Well, dear Marvel Noise listeners, I just wanted to take a moment, a pause, a second to reflect. The team has made it to Thunderbolts 100.
Yay!
And by the team, I mean your faithful Thunderbolt coverage squad, being me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, and up in Canada, the original Man of Thunder, WWX Kev.
It's earth-shattering.
And obviously the only one that makes this train run on time with any semblance of organization and order, coming from the bunker, the Baron Zemo, to my Janice Vell, Super Steve.
Justice like lightning. Here we go.
We are the Thunderbolt Squad. You've probably heard our segments previously, but we started covering with Thunderbolts #1. Kevin graciously provided a reading order, which sometimes disputed the official Marvel reading order. And I say, Kevin's the fan. He realms. We've taken diversions into Citizen V limited series. We read the novelization, Avengers v. Thunderbolt. So it's a lot more than 100 issues. But here we stand at issue 100.
And we've really worked hard in recent months, you know, to get all these episodes in and get to this, you know. Once we had it in our crosshairs, we closed the deal here. We got here.
Yes, it took a lot of pushing, especially Kevin, I think, ran out of some momentum. His love for Thunderbolts dipped ever so slightly, the shining star of our group. But the original genesis of this, Kevin being the big Thunderbolts fan, me being a new fan, and Steve being somewhere in between. Well, I have not reached the point where I picked up the issues. I didn't pick it up till well past this. Sometime, I think, in the Jeff Parker run. But, Steve, were you on 100?
Well, I dropped off the title when it was starting to go downhill on its way to 75, when it changed everything and became Fight Bolts there. And then the very next issue that I picked up, other than the Avengers Thunderbolts limited series there that we talked about with Kitson Art, I think it was this issue, 100. And that was one of the motivations for me coming back on and joining you to do this whole segment when you guys got the ball rolling for dozens of issues before I got on your gravy train, is that not only did I want to do those Hawkeye issues, because I remember the Hawkeye, Moonstone, Songbird type stuff being a great little triangle of personalities. But then when that faded away, the next thing I read was 100, and I wanted to see, well, how the heck did they get to this point? How did the pieces of the puzzle get put into on the chessboard, that is, get put into these places for this issue to take place like this? And then it was another few issues before I read another Thunderbolts issue. I think it was like when Diggle came on.
What? You're breaking my head. I can see you not wanting to come on with, like, continue on with after 100, but...
Well, I didn't know what I was missing. Well, you see why this was the goal now, all along?
Yeah. But I don't know why.
I read it,
like,
without context.
Yeah, you're like, oh, Ellis, that's not... Oh, Diggle, that seems to be... I don't know. I guess you like Diggle more than Ellis. I don't know.
Well, isn't that the next thing was Diggle, or Ellis was first?
Ellis was first.
Oh, okay. Well, Ellis was the next thing that I read then.
Okay.
Check that.
And I'm going to assume, Kevin, you had 100 hot off the presses in your hands.
Yeah, it was a little awkward, though, because it's like $3.99, $5.75 Canadian, and this has a lot of reprints. And, of course, they put, like, oh, rare Thunderbolt stories on the first issue. And if you were following since the first issue and you got all that stuff, it's like, yeah, you're like, okay, that's a pricey issue for stuff I already own.
Like those monster issues.
Yeah, usually I like those because I was like, I don't have Avengers 100 or whatever, but this time, yeah, I was all up to date.
Well, I am following along. I did start out with the issues at first, but now I've moved to doing the Marvel Unlimited, so the listeners at home can join us. I prefer the full page style with the big up, and you scroll down the page. I don't know, Steve, do you do panel to panel or full page? What's your take on it?
Always full page. If I want to look at a panel closer, I'll just pinch it.
Exactly. And Kevin's here to give us all the ads and updates from the paper issues, which I miss doing. But I had already bought a huge pile of Thunderbolts and decided that maybe I should save some room and do the rest of this. So Thunderbolts 100. And as tradition, Kevin, who are our Thunderbolts?
All right, our Thunderbolts. Songbird's team. First, we have Songbird, funny enough. Melissa, Sound, Photon, Janus Vale, Cosmic, Joystick, Janus, Action, Atlas, Eric, Tall, Radioactive Man, Radioactive, Swordsman, Swords, Nighthawk, Money, and the Thunderbolts team, Zemo's team. Zemo, Baron, Mac4, Abe, Polize, Blizzard, Donnie, Freezes, Mankiller, Strong, Blackout, Dark Force, Moonstone, Puppet, Fixer, Techie.
What about Blackout?
Dark Force.
Oh, sorry. I thought his name was... I'm on a different thing. Well, you threw me when you mentioned that Zemo was no longer fertile. I didn't know that about him.
Poor Nighthawk. Oh, man. Two teams again? That whole thing? Here we go.
I know. It's a tradition.
So we're right on... We left off where... Moonstone, being manipulated by Zemo, blasted the, I guess we're going to call it Songbird's team, although I think we're meant to think they're the real Thunderbolts, as opposed to Zemo's Redeemer Bolts or whatever.
Or you could blasted. Think of Songbirds as the new Thunderbolts, like there's the new Avengers. I guess you could go in that direction.
Oh, there you go. And one thing that they did in a few of these issues, I'm not thrilled with, is that weird little it starts with like the end, but it's kind of left nebulous, and then you flash back to the action.
Yep.
I don't think it really adds a whole lot in it, but I do like the opening. Oh, I forgot to give the credits. Bad Andy, because the credits are actually in here, and it's Fabian back, and Tom Grummett, Gary Erskine, Soto Colors, Jay Brown. Woo! I'm glad they put the credits back in.
You're all and rusty, and the cover asks, "Whose side are you on?" Because Civil War is coming up, and lots of Thunderbolts are fighting on the cover.
This is the spring of 2006, and they, with the 100th issue, they got rid of the dual numbering thing.
Yeah, that I'm glad. Well, also, it's no longer considered, at least in their indexing type thing. I don't think it's no longer considered new Thunderbolts either. It's just back to being Thunderbolts.
I don't know how you volume that out, but the title now, if you look in the indicia, is now Thunderbolts again. Woohoo! But, yeah, so they got zapped by Moonstone into some weird dimension. And we don't know where they are, unless, of course, till we get back to the Baron's team. And they all have, they don't have flying Vs. They have, like, these cool surfboard-like things that they fly in on. I'm like, I kind of wanted the Vs. Did you guys want the Vs there as, well, like, a throwback?
If you look in one panel at Fixer's thing, it's like his specifically has a V. Like, these giant things are jetting out from it.
Yeah, like little scissors.
I guess Zemo can give them whatever he wants, but, you know, Fixer's the only one that's like, you're giving me the V.
I think those are little, like, Wi-Fi antenna. Because he's probably helping control all of them, or at least power them with some, like, Tesla through-the-air type, charge.
Now,
I think they're done with V. They're done with the V Battalion, and I think that chapter's closed. Sorry. Womp womp.
Now, I do like that Blizzard's doing the Iceman, Spider-Man, and his amazing friends trick. So that part brings me hope. But I wasn't quite sure. Like, there's a little bit of tension with Carla and the team, and then Zemo was clearly just controlling her like a puppet. And I wasn't really sure. I mean, they give an explanation for it, but I don't think it makes sense of why he used, like, to disorient them, but so he could save them. And I'm like, why didn't you just zap? They didn't know you saved them to begin with, so it seems. I mean, I guess they find out subsequent, but it seemed like a weird con. One of the interesting things about the Thunderbolts in particular, as these issues have gotten on, they seem to have these weird twists that they then go through pains to explain why they happened.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like the old days over at the Distinguished Competition in the Silver Age, where they would come up with a cover image and then have to write a story for it, you know? It's like they come up with a cliffhanger or a shocking story beat and then kind of back away from it in the next issue in one way or another. Diminish it or somehow otherwise change it around.
Yeah, Zemo was behind everything the whole time. And making him actually served a purpose that I'm not quite sure how saving the world works into all that. But anyhow.
It doesn't matter. He's got the knee-high white boots, the almost to the elbow white gloves, and the white belt. That's pretty cool. When Zemo's wearing more white than purple, it's pretty cool design.
Well, he knows how to make an entrance.
I think he needs a skirt, though, to be honest with you.
Or a half cape.
Yes. But our Melissa's, the new Thunderbolts, as we're calling them, they're in this unstable environment and finally find some shelter, and they're going to regroup. But we get a classic Thunderbolts cutaway, which is a little bit longer than it should be, but a flash to Steve's favorite, Dallas Reardon, and everyone's favorite Marvel bureaucrat, Henry Peter Gyrich. Talking about how they're working intentionally with Zemo, because Zemo revealed something to them. And I think it's going to be, spoiler alert, obviously, later on we're going to find out that the Photon, which is the fake Captain Marvel, that Kevin corrected me, rightly so, that was a legitimate character, or maybe it was Steve by this point.
Atlas killed him. Atlas killed that character, though.
Yeah, so, pretty much. Pretty effectively.
But now he's a Genis Vell, a.k.a. Photon, and he's the one that's causing, that I think is the reason why Gyrich and Reardon trusted him. I just don't know why it was so convoluted, and that's what feels like this could have been done a lot quicker in general. But we find out that Zemo shrunk them into the Moonstone gems, and then now it's time for Melissa's team to have kind of a heart-to-heart and figure out what's going on. And it looks like Photon has decided to come out of his coma, which Dr. Chen, a.k.a. Radio Man, said he could do at any time. It seemed like we kind of almost missed an issue or something. It feels like that's the other thing. At times, things kind of jump ahead, and you're like, wait, did I miss when he came out of the coma? But anyways, what did you guys think about the powwow that the team has? Melissa's team here in the cave, about discussing where they're at.
I like when they get to the point with Joystick and Nighthawk. We're supposed to be heroes and all this stuff. And I made a joke last episode about, hey, they only took him on for his money. And then they happen to mention that here. I'm like, yeah, I guess that was pretty obvious.
It seems like the stuff with Zemo's team is like all Zemo. And the stuff with Melissa's team is all really character moments. You know, they're sort of waiting to have to react to whatever the next thing that happens. And meanwhile, they're talking to each other and reacting to it and trying to figure out what to do next.
Sadly, I'm not that excited at this point, though. And like, oh, Photon's going crazy or going to destroy the universe. And it's like, you made me like bored with that character by now. So I'm just like, okay, yeah, let's get that on with.
Yeah, the idea is that we found out in the last issue there's a chance that Photon could wipe out everything in the universe, but the details of how that will happen are going to be revealed throughout the issue. But that is the threat. So is Photon a good guy or a bad guy? Is he going to destroy everything? What's going on? That gets revealed in the course of it. My problem with the Nighthawk thing was I really don't like the storytelling style of like all the stat panels that introduce beats and timing. Like, I've read comics a long time. I don't need a lot of breaks in between. Like, you can just have that all in. You can have that in the same panel. I'm sophisticated enough to understand that a panel isn't really a moment in time always. It can capture a progression of time. And I feel that we've lost a little bit of that in the comic book world that I've loved so much. The kind of, it's not just about compression versus decompression. It's about the idea of what does a panel represent? It's not like a still from a movie frame. It's its own sort of weird rules of physics and time passage and everything like that.
Yeah, I still think that it's, if not overused, though, it is a way to visually fool the reader into slowing down to, it's usually should be used for an awkward moment, right? Where there's an awkward pause. And how do you write in an awkward pause? In a play, you put little brackets in and you say, awkward pause. And here, it's a little bit different. And did the comics we grow up reading have a lot of awkward pauses? I don't know. But now they do. And here, I don't know if it's, you know, I understand your gripe, but at the same time, I don't know if this was too egregious here because it's still a, if you're talking about the panel where Joystick creams Nighthawk in the face with her joystick, you know, it's still a page that has four other panels on it. And the little panels are dispersed as sort of cells or frames, almost like little photographs thrown on the table over the over like a two panel page. And he's saying, hey, we're supposed to be heroes. And he gets no answer. And then he gets punched in the face. And I get the little panel of it sort of time stopping where he's looking for an answer like, hey, he's realizing he's the only hero there. And it's true. I like Nighthawk.
I do, too. It seems like he got kind of, he's portrayed a little bit. But I've noticed that with the sort of Thunderbolt run. If they, whatever they need to have happen with the character's motivation or depiction, they'll do. I don't always feel that they're consistent from time to time, but that's just, sometimes they're in service of the story. So but at this point in the narrative, though, we still think Zemo's probably the bad guy because he makes a whole threatening statement about how he's going to show Photon that he's God and he's angry and he's going to punish him. Again, that's so they can have this kind of fake turn where it turns out Zemo might actually have a point. But it's like, well, if you have a point, don't come off like a jerk. Talking about how you use anger to God or whatever. It seems like that was done again in service of the story. But we get a big double page spread, which you got to have on a big monitor to see of the two teams. Zemo, you know, they come back to our world to have a big battle.
They come back to our world after Zemo reaches into the microverse. Which is, I mean, that's a cool, I mean, it's a concept that shouldn't work on any level, but it's still a cool visual and a cool idea, and anyone who grew up reading Micronauts comics had to at least think about what if you put your hand in there, like...
You'd have a giant, down into a the, giant hand.
Down into the Prometheus pit, you know?
But, and we're at the point now where they still like a lot of Flash and, like, starbursts and everything on Photons, you know, because he's supposed to be like a galactic style So that's in the middle. But he and Zemo are going to have a big fisticuff. You guys like the big double page spread?
Usually at the beginning of the issues, better than in the middle here. Oh, guess what we have time for? An ad break, too. A lot of Fantastic Four for the movie in here. And they're putting out comic creators on Fantastic Four. And they actually ask some questions here in the promotional material. So I'll ask Steve, who came up with the phrase, it's clobbering time?
Really?
That's one of the questions. Why did Dr. Doom abandon science for magic?
I don't think he abandoned science.
Make sure we have Mark Waid.
I'm pretty sure those Doom bots aren't made of magic.
It says, now the answers can finally be revealed. Apparently Tom DeFalco wrote this book.
This is a fantastic book. This whole series, it's from Titan Books, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
I have it with a blue trade dress. They are like digest-sized, square-bound softcover books. And they did one on maybe Avengers, one on Fantastic Four,
Spider-Man,
one on
maybe?
The X-Men, one on Spider-Man. Yeah, exactly. And it's DeFalco interviewing all of these different creators. And remember, he was editor, a writer, and editor-in-chief of Marvel, and writer of Fantastic Four himself. So the interview with Paul Ryan, I find, rest in peace, just this past year, who passed away suddenly. That interview is great, and everyone is really, really frank, and including DeFalco. They talk about all kinds of dirt and frustrations they had along the way, and they really try to go chronologically through people's runs and contributions to the different characters and groups. They're really good books. If you can ever find one, I don't know if they... I'm certain they're still not in, they're not in print now, but if you can ever find one secondhand, definitely pick them up. I'm really happy to have them on my shelf. I pick them up every now and again, especially when we do creator spotlights or look at different creators' runs on this year's podcast, and I'll flip through and see, like, oh, what did Roy say about his run on this, or what was Byrne saying about that part of his run on Fantastic Four or whatever. It's all in there. And they're all new interviews, too. They're not old interviews like rehashed from, like, Wizard or Comics Buyer's Guide or something.
Yeah, so they do sound good, actually. I do like interviews, especially like the Sean Howe history book and all that sort of thing. It's fun to look back and peek behind the curtain. But while we're so the new Thunderbolts get pulled back into our world, and so the teams are going to face off against each other, but it's they know each other, you know, so it's going to be difficult. And the new Thunderbolts, Melissa's team, was debating whether they're going to need to kill Photon anyways. And obviously that's what Zemo wants to do. So is this correct? Like, and that's the sort of Thunderbolts thing. You know, they always have this conflicted motivations about what to do. So that's sort of the backstory running as you get each of them squaring off against different groups. And I do love Nighthawk has a fun little... where he does like this kick where he pushes his body up off the ground in the back with his legs kind of twisted and everything. This part was fun. I would have liked more back and forth, as Steve talked about, I think the last time, maybe the time before, how much fun we enjoy in some of the older books where they do more of the back and forth.
I like the Mankiller Atlas one.
I was just about to say that. That's cool. She uses pin particles to grow big, pounds them into the turf. Like he's a Looney Tunes character driving a spike into the ground.
Yeah, he doesn't get to do a big boot right now.
As the battle goes on, though, it's hard to be rooting for what's left of Genus Vell. And this really isn't him. I mean, he's all glorked out when he's more humanoid and he's like fighting for his life, but he really doesn't have any argument to make. Other than that he wants to live, and it's all very strange. And I know that at this point he's about to be, if not already, redundant because they're doing the Captain Marvel thing, revamping the character with Phyla-Vell over in the Annihilation stuff that's either happening right around this time or just happened, you know?
Well, as you say, my only experience come from reading this, and he's not that interesting. But Kevin, you were going to say?
Oh, well, you want me to defend Captain Marvel, Janus?
Peter David Ritten. What I needed to read instead of this. Like, my only experience is from reading this series, these 20 issues he's in or whatever, and he's not very interesting.
No, he's... That's why it was, like, a character I loved, and then he came into this book, and I'm like... And then they're like, oh, we're going to kill him off, and I'm like, yeah, might as well. I'm like, I'm so bored of him.
but he's already been killed off. This is a shadow of him.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Steve, make a note, let's not bore Kevin.
But it's also, I don't know if it's this issue where they made a note that Warbird has went off, left Homeland Security there, and went off to do her own book. Like, they mentioned her with the Avengers, and then she went off to do her thing. So it's just kind of funny that all these other more modern pieces are falling into place.
And what they reveal here is that, as I've been alluding to, is that when Atlas pummeled Genis Velt and threw him into the East River, he literally pummeled him to death. He killed him.
Yeah.
He killed him, but dead. And he had to reemerge as a cocoon that Zemo, with the Moonstones, manipulated, inefficiently manipulated, such that now he's this ticking time bomb. So it's sort of Zemo's mess to clean up.
So the next time Moonstone comes back, she should have access to all these extra powers then, if she learns from like what Zemo did in the past. Then.
But she's not coming back, Kevin. We saw in a...
I haven't seen Carla with pupils in a long time. I don't know if she's...
Well, it's funny that Blackout here, it's people mention that, oh, aren't you supposed to be dead? And it's not really Blackout here. He's just sort of, his body is just sort of hanging around being controlled by Zemo.
And you see when the Fixer's fighting, his backpack still has those two, like, antenna coming up off of it. I think they really were, like, beacon antenna-y type things.
It's because he's Fixer, too. He likes having stuff like that. He's like all these Doc Ock arms coming off of his tech pack and everything.
I thought they were more a preview of Spider-Man's armor he's going to get coming out of Civil War.
Tony saw that and he's like, I'm ripping that off.
Because, you know, Norbert, the Fixer, he knows what he's doing. So, yeah, we get Zemo's explanation, which thankfully... Joystick needs it re-explained by the Fixer, because I don't know that I really... I mean, I may have understood it, but I don't know that I really understood why he just didn't let Captain Marvel die, because no one knew it was Atlas. They could have just had Captain Marvel just disappeared and never came back. But anyways, there's the funny scene where if you're going to grow big on Atlas, you better grow really big, because he dwarfs Mankiller and stomps on her with the boot, a la Monty Python.
Again, so much boot stomping.
He's been waiting to do that since the bar scenes way back in the 30s and 40s issues.
Oh, jeez.
Remember when he used to visit her bar?
Yeah. I used to drink and watch sports.
But as the battle concludes, we have our big twist. And that is, out of Blackout, a form appears, and it's the Smuggler.
You know what? I've totally forgotten that the Smuggler came back. Like, I obviously lost details like that. I'm like, did that character ever return? And then I think I punched it up, like, last time or something, like, after we did the podcast. And I was like, holy jeez, I just spoiled myself for 100.
Conrad Jostin, who's Atlas's brother, who he calls Connie, which I think is just... not a great nickname for a guy, but I don't know. Maybe it works that way. But so he's been trapped in the Dark Force dimension. And as traditional, the two that have had the most sort of servant and master relationship are Zemo and Atlas. They're always on their own working side deals. And so he's like, you want your brother, you slow down the other Thunderbolts so I can kill Photon. And he's got to do it. Because, you know, it's his brother. Like, no one's going to really blame him at the end of the day. But Zemo then has a bit of a character shift where he shows that there's just no way to save him. Like, every alternate reality. Because those Moonstones are a lot more powerful than we thought. They can open up rifts to different worlds and things. Like, it really is more than... I mean, maybe it's having two of them. Maybe that's the excuse we can do to get our no prize if Carla ever does come back and isn't quite as powerful. But yeah, so the Zemo characterization is weird because earlier he drops that pop culture reference into Animal House. And I'm like, I'm not sure when Baron Zemo was watching. I don't know. I think I've read too many old Captain America comics to.
Well, remember when they had the Crimson Cowl's, you know, headquarters? Didn't they have a full movie studio?
Well, that's. I don't want to jump ahead into another issue, but when he's constructing everyone's headquarters, and I'm like, yeah, but do they have a full movie studio and a theater and a bowling alley?
The brick pizza oven.
Yeah. A sauna?
So the rest of the new Thunderbolts are turning on poor Photon. And it's gotten so bad that the Radioactive Man decides to blend in with the grass because they use the same coloring of green for him and the grass, which might have been a poor choice at that point. But they're like, so even if you want to do this, the Swordsman points out, how are you going to possibly do it? That's when they point out that Blackout wasn't here just for Connie. That was the backup reason. The main reason is Zemo's going to freeze him in time and split him up and put him in different pockets in the Dark Force dimension.
And you mean like says, one limb at a time? Like one limb in one dimension, one limb in the other dimension?
That's literally how it appears visually.
Like pulling apart an action figure.
But my favorite is they leave his head in shadow while he's zapping him away and give him just two little white eyes, so he looks almost like the Red Skull or something. And gives the dreaded line, he will never return, and he pops like Impy the Impossible Man. Mm-hmm. Which I think is where this is going. Impy's going to rescue him from the Dark Force dimension.
And before he pops out of there, his head is like on a, it's like as if it's on a mantle, you know, it's like it's on his wall like a trophy. And then bloop.
But crazy. Zemo is square and brings back Conrad. So the smuggler is back.
Connie!
I know you guys all want smuggler action figures, right?
Oh, I would probably buy one of those. And the Redeemers are coming back then, right? They're not all dead?
We have a friend named Conrad. We call him Rad. Not Connie.
Yeah, the Redeemers. Yeah, this is the beginning of the Redeemers. They're going to change the name of the book and... But basically, the Thunderbolts are like, so what's the whole point of this thing, Zemo? Like, why are you doing this? What's your game? And then, right when he's going to ask, they cut to the little memorial service they're doing for Photon, or the memory of Photon.
Yeah, but it's just him and Melissa.
Yeah, I don't know where the rest of them went, so we never get our answer to that question.
Well, that's the answer. He's trying to win points with Melissa. He's trying to model his costume after hers by adding a lot more white. And no matter what he does, he's trying to explain it and smooth talk it to Melissa for some reason.
Yeah, and then they have a kiss scene, but in the next issue, when he shows an alternate dimension where they kiss, she's like, in your dream. So I don't know if this is our dimension or I don't know. It seems like she's kind of into him, but then sometimes she's not into him. So I don't know if she just blows hot and cold but it's weird to dedicate a memory to him by kissing. Like, I've given a few toasts before, but I've never been like, to the memory of Dad, let's make out.
Do you see where Gina Svell's memorial gravestone is?
I thought that was going to be in the microverse, but I wasn't sure.
No, it's right next to Mar-Vell's
grave. Wait, I couldn't recognize it from
the... It's the Starlin-designed Mar-Vell's gravestone there. Put it next to his daddy.
That's what, Jupiter or one of the moons up there, I'm guessing?
On Titan.
They take him home? Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, so that was 100, and that leads to 101, which has Zemo and Moonstone kissing on the cover. I remember thinking when I saw this way back when, before we'd gotten very far, that it was going to take some interesting convolutions to get to that point.
Yeah. Well, we missed Super Steve's review of the next 40 pages of 100 when he wasn't here.
Well, for the electronic copy, that's where it ends. Like, that's we don't get the reprint material. Like, it's over. I mean, you know, we've covered all the reprint material according to you, so I don't feel so bad. But yeah, for us, that's the end. It goes right to 101, and it goes right to sort of the colored balloon, which would have been thought balloons, but they're not cool, so now they're thought captions. But they do the coloring sort of a lot of times lend it. And this is where, as Kevin mentioned, Zemo's folding castle, by using the stones, he creates sort of teleporting links to the real world. So your hideout, you can get there instantly, but it's actually, you know, a real place in China, a real apartment in Manhattan, a real farm that Atlas grew up with.
Different creators on this one, too.
Oh, it does. The art style does look different, but as usual, Marvel Unlimited decided that who needs creators on their book? So this does not have the creators listed. Kevin, who are they?
Well, our differences are penciler Dave Ross and inker Cam Smith. Maybe there were more differences. I didn't back check to 100.
It's well, Dave Ross used to do a lot of West Coast Avengers, amongst other books. And Cam Smith is more known for inking, like, I think Gary Frank on Incredible Hulk.
Well, it's definitely a different style. I thought there might have been maybe two inkers, or like, it feels like some of them, it's a little different at times, but maybe that's just the coloring or whatever.
This whole issue is all character moments. There's no villain, there's no fight.
But it's still kind of strange, though.
Well, that makes it strange in some way, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I guess so. You look at the cover, and you're just the whole time you're thinking, how are they going to get to that? But they already got to it in 100, in a way.
And they do it twice, in consecutive panels, on consecutive pages. Well, not do it, just kiss.
Yeah, it feels like this is... I mean, I like character moments, but it feels like this is like, okay, now we have to explain all those twists and turns and get to a point where we can push this forward. And Zemo's explaining that because Melissa wasn't on Counter-Earth, she's the one he has to convince that he's legit. And Radioactive Man is very suspicious, as most of the people are.
Well,
but Zemo points
out...
go ahead, Kevin.
You convince people by sending the Purple Man... after your team. Like, if you want to convince someone, you send the Purple Man after them, and then they're totally convinced you're on their side.
Yeah, his actions are so distrustworthy from the get-go. But I do think that this art team, some of the panels with Zemo, like the one where he goes to the Jostin farm, he looks pretty badass. Like, that's a good look for him, standing in the field of wheat with, like, his sword at his side and his gun. And... you know, he explains how he bought the land for the Jostins and restored the farm. And then Eric and Conrad can kind of have some time to try and explain where they came from. And Eric feels guilty. And Conrad explains he did it to, like, follow in his footsteps and win him amnesty. But it seems like maybe Conrad should just give up the superhero gig. Like, maybe he's not everyone's cut out to be a hero.
He's lucky he's made it back to this point.
But then Melissa, in each one of these, will dip in to give some motivational speech about why they're going to do it. And then here's where we get the fake out, the no prize for explaining that in the Avengers Thunderbolt series, Zemo sacrificed himself and got burned. But he explains he healed, but he keeps the mask on to fake out the Avengers for psychological value.
What? So... that just means they can burn his face all over again.
I'm saying Adhesive X time. That's what you... And so we go back to Nighthawk, who's been severely misused in general. And he's the only one that's like, you guys just trust Zemo? And you guys just wanted me for my money? And he just takes off. And Melissa's like, eh, nuts to you. And so's the rest of the team. And I feel like Nighthawk's like a pretty smart character normally. It seemed like... I don't know. I didn't like him being misused this way.
There's some good toy promotion ads in here. There looks like there's an Amazing Spider-Man wave that I totally missed with Shocker, Venom, where he's all like, translucent.
I want that Shocker.
And then you get to the Marvel Legends, and it's the Mojo series, which has Baron Zemo. But, you know, Helmet's father. And Longshot, Mojo, Falcon, first appearance, Iron Man, Psylocke, and Luke Cage. That was a good wave.
Yep, I have a few of those.
Yeah, we're in modern times now, kids. And the running gag with Donnie is talking about how he got fired, so he's always needling Melissa about if he makes any mistake, he's going to get fired. And she's like, well, you know, it's like the motivational point of it. And then Zemo shows her all these alternate timelines that are like an interesting power. And I wonder if Moonstone will ever be able to figure that out, including one where they're romantically engaged and one where he's fighting Captain America and the Grandmaster and all these ones. But it certainly lends to Zemo being able to figure out and be more of a master planner and have be more on the ball, because they're really upping Zemo to be like a Doctor Doom level type guy.
Well, without the scars.
Yes, for now, this version, this model. But the other thing is they've decided to level up Joystick and make her more powerful. And Zemo points out that the powers come from her, they're not from her suit, because she charges her. I think they just wanted to up her level of value to the team in a way, and maybe try and add more dimension. Because I think, as we commented, her little bit about I'm just in it for the thrills makes her pretty one note to begin with. So I'm glad they're starting to build a little bit more into that.
I guess they didn't want her to be like the Dallas of the team.
No. And then the strangest segment is this like whitewash, no background. Like, is this an alternate dimension?
No, it's her memory.
Yeah.
They're standing there and he's about to turn around and they're about to kiss. But quickly they flash back to the first time they kissed, so that we know why they're about to kiss.
And the
it's awkward.
Yeah, the pretense is Zemo saves her life when some part of the dimension falls apart.
Why and I'm like, the gems.
Yeah, there's no way he didn't set that up, by the way, either, right? Like that just accidentally happened, and he happened to, like. It seems like it would be something to. I don't know. I don't know how you would trust him pointlessly like that, but, you know.
He's been working her for a while.
It's all a con. You know what would look great on the wall, though, is if you had a big Hydra on your wall. Like, that would look pretty awesome.
Well, the other thing to remember is this is before the movies and TV show really built up Hydra to be quite the big bad of the Marvel U. Like, Hydra was just another AIM, another one of these different organizations. So it's kind of quaint to think of this back in the time when Hydra was just another one of those groups instead of the group that brings down S.H.I.E.L.D. and all this other stuff.
Yet they never gave Strucker any respect. What's with that?
Well, they got to get the CG ready for his Claw of Death hand.
Oh, that's right.
And the monocles are tough to carry into battle. Usually they pop out when you're punching Captain America. But it does seem like there's going to be problems with having Strucker Jr. because Zemo sort of killed his sister. You would think it would take a little bit more than just a few speeches from Melissa to kind of get over that. I don't feel like that was well addressed. I mean, they mention it, but I don't know how. Because the whole point of them were they were supposed to be really to get, like, kind of creepy close. Like, that kind of, like, yeah, I know you're twins, but this is a little too close. In fact, their powers were linked and everything. I don't know.
You have to touch skin to skin.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, it just felt like they were supposed to be closer than natural. But it seemed like they sort of gloss over it here. Kevin, did you have any issues with that concern, or were you satisfied that, yeah, he's going to be on board? Melissa talked him into it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I was super well-versed in the twins other than, you know, creepiness.
Yeah, for me, they were X-Men characters. Like, it was weird for me to see them in a different context. Because that's the only one I think I mean, I'm sure they've appeared in millions of places, but for me, weren't they in like 200 or 250 or one of the big anniversary issues where they go after Magneto, I think.
Yep.
200.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is that's where they're from, and they're that creepy twin things. But
Magneto with the bare shoulders sticking out.
So at the end of all these moments, it comes down to Dr. Chen asked the question that we all want to know is, how did Melissa fall in love with Zemo?
Yep.
But he does it quite emotionally.
And she's got his tachyon particles all over her.
Oh, jeez. Nanoprobes?
And, you know, and so he's like, she's not. And her explanation is, the closer I get to Helmet Zemo, the easier it'll be to kill him.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, so Melissa's like making out with this dude just to, it seemed like.
Kill Photon.
Like a bit of a bridge too far, I guess, but to use her feminine wiles on. But on the other hand, I was like, well, maybe she's just playing Chen to pacify him.
Why doesn't she kiss, while she's kissing Zemo, send one of her sound constructs right through his brain?
Because she's not close enough to him, Steve.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. It seems like she'd have a million opportunities to do away with him at any one of a number of times. But again, it's another one of those. While I like the twists in Thunderbolts, a lot of times it feels they don't hold up to close scrutiny. Because they're just meant to be like, what?
Now we're going to take over the world. What?
I'd rather have this issue with a fill-in artist, though, and have it be sort of the downtime issue after the big issue 100 than to have some sort of inventory issue 101 like some other titles have done over the years, you know?
Yes, yes. I mean, I generally speaking, for all my nitpicking, I find the issues engaging. Like, I'm interested, and I don't always agree with the characterization, but it's way better to have me interested in nitpicking than just bored. Like, I would rather have this where I'm like, I'm still, there are parts I like, I'm curious, I'm engaged enough to have criticisms, as opposed to some of those issues where you read and you're just like, eh, I didn't like it, I didn't dislike it, it just existed. Like, this still has a little bit of juice with me, which I appreciate.
Except for Kevin, he was bored.
Yeah, I wasn't so excited. I think
Kevin's checked out, but he'll come back around when we get to 102.
Yeah.
That's got the Grand Master Flash, the rapper.
All right. This is exciting.
And he's got Speed Demon, and Zemo's got Joystick, and there he's going to battle off. Forget fighting, you know, his brothers. He's going to take on Zemo because, you know, he's only existed since, you know, the previous universe was around. And Zemo's, you know, he's been here, what, 60 years? They're clearly an even match, you know?
You know, when you do a cover, you definitely want this giant signature of the digital letters TGGE06 on the cover.
Yeah, those were on the last few, too. Grommet likes to have, and Gary, because that's our team back again, Grommet and Erskine.
I was just happy to see, as the issue opened, that Nighthawk's story arc here isn't over.
No,
because he goes back to join up with his old teammates there, the, what do you want to call them, the Squadron Sinister?
No, they're called Supreme Power now, Steve. Get the name right. Jeez.
They prefer to be called Supreme Power.
You know what the funny thing was? I thought the Photon story and the Grandmaster Flash story both concluded in 100. And then I'm like, what? There's still like way more issues with the Grandmaster to go? And I'm like, oh, jeez. Like, I didn't read these over like many, many times.
Did you see that they got Frank Miller to come in and draw Hyperion in his Dark Knight 3 Superman style?
Oh, nice.
On that first panel where they show Hyperion, where they show Nighthawk coming in?
I'm not wrong with that.
Well, what I like is
it's pretty wrong. it's some low-hanging fruit is what I'm saying.
But it also just comes up like he pulled his underwear up. Like, right to his pecs or whatever. It is an interesting outfit. But, hey, you have to show off your... Well, in the big splash page, Speed Demon is also showing the world why he's the fastest one around.
He's got his... But the other guy, not so much.
But, so basically we see that there's... the Squadron Supreme or Supreme Power or Taco Bell Supreme Taco or whatever we're calling these guys.
Justice
they
League.
They get their power from the Wellspring of Power is what they're calling it. Yeah. So they have to find...
You know that whole concept, the Wellspring, it's like, oh, you can give anyone superpowers or whatever. I'm like, not entirely grooving on that type of thing.
Well, they had that with the Power Broker and all. They every once in a while, or when they had like a million mutants, like they're like, we need more heroes, so let's come up with a cheap and quick way so I don't have to think up origin stories for all these guys.
I don't know, but I like the Power Broker. Like, I like certain things like that. I don't know. But something like, oh, there's been these things around that have been, that we never knew about before, and it's like, okay.
Speaking of origin stories, Joysticks is pretty horrific.
Yeah, her old man was a degenerate gambler who frequently couldn't pay his bills, so got beat up. So it's interspersed throughout this. Yeah, in front of the family, and that's seemingly going to be why she's such a thrill seeker herself. But her mission is to shadow the speed demon while they're both trying to track these wellsprings of power who are guarded by these robot cybernetic monks.
From Kunlun?
I don't think so because they go down pretty quick. Oh, I'd like to think if they were, they'd be better fighters. So basically, speed demon takes it out while he's shadowed by Joystick, and then they learn that they can like transmit their power. So each confrontation is about learning more about this group. And when Speed Demon leaves, she takes one of the guys who's left alive and tortures him for even more information. And that's again cut back to her childhood, and it's about, you don't just break their body, you gotta break their spirit.
You think the web address cakes.com still works, Andrew?
Don't just type that in. You could get stuck like I did on that stupid Daredevil game.
Well, it says Superhero Celebration. And it looks like it's like a mini, well, I wouldn't say a Daily Bugle, but a Spider-Man building anyways. And there's like a Spider-Man topping and all this stuff. And it's like, oh, look for all your favorite Marvel heroes on cupcakes, cookies, and cakes at your local bakery. Or just visit cakes.com. So I'm thinking that's pretty generic. I don't know if it's thiscakes.com anymore, but probably someone has that name.
Well, I'm going to say most of the local grocery stores I go into have a little Spider-Man topper they'll put on your cake. So,
but this one has Wolverine, Hulk, and Spider-Man if you don't want the Gargoyle Spider-Man one.
So, you know, I don't think that's quite the exclusive offer. It's not exactly a Lucite Spider-Man bowling ball, is all I'm saying. So we also see the sort of behind the scenes where now Zemo has to deal with Guy Rich and Reardon as sort of he's their, you know, they're the government liaison, and he's sort of playing them apart. And, you know, and that's when we get foreshadowing about the Registration Act, because as you guys mentioned, we're getting on Civil War. So that's going to be a big derailment of everything soon.
Oh, yay. I don't think it'll be much of a derailment. Oh, and this is the first Civil War.
Is Gyrick a Skrull yet?
What?
Oh, no, that's going to be Secret Invasion, Steve. We got to wait for that that ridiculous, again, another line-wide hijacking.
Hey, with Carol Danvers out of the way, Dallas really stepped right up, didn't she?
Yeah, she's big time now.
Yeah, she's like holding the pen in her hand all confident, waving it around at people.
I know you love still stealing Dallas.
But, so they're racing who's going to get to the Wellspring of Power first. You know, is it going to be the Grandmaster's team, or is it going to be the Thunderbolts team? And Joystick spying on them, and she's the one that's got the drop on them. But what really becomes interesting is she ends up confronting the speed demon at one of the power sources, and it turns out that she's just as fast as he is, and he is like one of the fourth or fifth fastest guys in the Marvel U now because of the Wellspring of Power. So somehow she went from being a Dallas Reardon knockoff to being like the Flash, and I'm not quite sure how that happened.
She kicks his butt. parries every blow he tries to lay on her, and then breaks his leg like Tonya Harding style.
Yeah, I could have done without the blur effect. I mean, you can just have multiple copies. We get it, that there's not suddenly seven speed demons. Like, but yeah, it's a pretty brutal scene where she breaks his leg. Because, you know, she's going to be she's the one that's deciding to get violent. And that's when he's like, speed demon, as he's whimpering, is like, how can you think Zemo can handle all this power? And she just gives that kind of, you know, she doesn't care. But she also indicates, like, hey, who says I'm going to let Zemo have the power? Because her whole point, and this is where they reveal more of her character, is that she plays dumb. She's not just some dumb. She right. likes to, and that's, and I'm glad, because like I said, I was getting tired of her one note. And now you see some of her background about how she threw some games and gave up her dad and all these other sort of, her backstory isn't quite so good. And it turns out that she's working for the Grandmaster, I guess we're supposed to, because at the end he talks to her and says that, you know, they don't know which side you're playing for. So I assume he's really there talking to her, because he puts his hands on her shoulders. So she's working for the Grandmaster a while.
I hope she puts out an album too, though.
Because, you know, she's got all, like, cosmic ties.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's one of the elders of the universe, you know.
That explains why she got more power all of a sudden, at a minimum, at least. But yeah, you're right. Zemo against one of the elders of the universe seems like not maybe an even fight. But then this is all going to get derailed for Civil War. Well, and there's a chance I might have read this issue.
Really?
I did get... I started getting back into comics around this time, roughly. Not in any serious way, but fooling around. And my wife, I think, got me the Civil War on CD-ROMs. Marvel was still doing the let's put all our stuff out on CD-ROM. And I think she got me like the one that's all the Civil War stuff. So I may have read this issue in that context, but I wouldn't have known half these characters. You know, I wouldn't have known who Joystick was and the Smuggler, and I definitely would have made fun of the Swordsman's outfit. Like, all the things you've come to know. That would have been me in general.
So we have these Civil War half covers where they have, like, they take away basically your fancy logo stuff, and then they have, like, the regular, like, the basic text logo, and then it says a Marvel Comics event, Civil War. And Zemo's shaking hands with Iron Man, like that crazy possible future timeline vision.
Looks like Iron Man from Heroes Reborn. Without the smokestacks coming out of his back.
Funny. Well, what the other weird thing is, sometimes he has these weird... Yeah, the helmet's all weird on this one. But this is, for those of you that don't know, the big Civil War event where a group of young heroes messes up when they're fighting a hero and a bunch of civilians are killed. So the Superhero Registration Act is passed and it splits up the Marvel U because they said, hey, the villains are popular, but the heroes are more popular. So if heroes fight heroes, we'll sell a million issues.
Well, heroes versus heroes is a classic Marvel trope, but doesn't Tony like blame the wrong people and everything too? And then
this
and weird stuff.
Civil War was a well enough event, but I think it set like this tone that's lasted way too long about how everybody can't trust everybody, and it led into secret invasion. It just seemed like it set this tone where Marvel was going to have this kind of like everybody's at each other's throats forever. And it feels like we've gotten rid of that, but it took it took a return to Secret Wars.
Well, they just got rid of all the characters and replaced them. But yeah, I mean, Civil War was quite a story. And there were aspects of it that were quite entertaining, but they shoehorned, you know, characters into certain roles that are just completely out of character, like Mr. Fantastic and the whole thing with making the Thor clone thing, and all that stuff was just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah. They had to use a lot of... they had to rebuild a lot of those characters after their out-of-character reactions. It's funny that Daredevil in Civil War actually isn't Daredevil, too.
Right.
So that's kind of weird. And I, you know, I lost Captain Marvel, and then the New Warriors get thrown under the bus with Civil War. So not a good time for some of my favorite characters.
Well, yeah, we jump in with the Thunderbolts taking on Quicksand. You know, that classic character who I don't remember where she came from or whose villain she is. But she's basically like a Lady Sandman without the cool striped shirt.
Yeah.
Or the cornrows.
Well, she's not related to Norman Osborn, so.
No. So they're basically all reacting to the Civil War. This really is a legit, like, we're going to put the Elders of the Universe thing on the back burner while we have our Civil War moment. And it turns out that the government wants to use the Thunderbolts, but not to go after the heroes, because that would be, you know, expected and not good and generate a lot of bad blood, but to collect all the villains, because the heroes are too busy fighting. And that's where there's this weird panel where Tony Stark is in the Iron Man armor, and there's like a big hole in his head. I don't know if you guys saw that when they just meet up with Zemo, but maybe it's just in the Unlimited one. But when he, Dallas and Guy Ricker in the background, and it looks like there's a big hole in his head. And I'm like, clearly someone was putting the little wheel on, and when they were doing the perspective, went inside instead of leaving it outside. But I think it's a solid plan. You know, it makes sense. You don't want them fighting the heroes because, like I said, it'd be bad blood, but it'd be good for them to run down.
There's and a DC no one trusts Zemo. My comic.
Oh, DC ad for
For Superman for DC Returns, Cap? The video game. I never knew they made a video game. I obviously didn't play it for Superman Returns.
Almost all movies now get a quick video game. I've played some of them, but they tend not to be that great. I think because there's too much time pressure to get them done.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not too far away from the movie.
Yeah, I've noticed Marvel sometimes skipped out on them. But says, another thing you can check, www.bsuperman.com. Check that out and see if it works.
Yeah, I got burned once bit and twice shy. But the other rub is that they're also going to have to store the villains while they're working on their superhuman prison, which we've all come to know. That was that one where they eventually end up putting them in that other dimension.
Yeah.
Which creates a whole bunch of other
Area issues. 51 or 52 or whatever it was.
Yeah, if you just bring Captain Marvel back, he can run your prison for you.
Yeah. That's whacked. And you know what else is whacked? Is on the villains scoreboard or hit list, they show all three Beetle armors.
Yeah.
The original suction cup finger one. The John Byrne redesign, armored one. And then the big old tank one, yeah. And then they say that those armors were all stolen by some college kids.
Andrew, you stole one of those armors, did you?
Oh, you know which one I stole.
Yeah, Fixer doesn't... I don't know if we're supposed to take that he doesn't like the armor or if it's just a joke, but either way, I'm just like, oh, poor Andrew, when I read this one scene.
Yeah, they're all making fun of the best Beetle armor.
Yeah.
Well, it's also not drawn in a particularly... Like, they make it look extra lame when it doesn't have to be drawn that way. Like, you can draw it to look... You know, you can, you know, channel your inner Dick Ayers and make that thing look cool. Or you can make it look like he's wearing a saggy pair of tights.
And, you know, it's so funny. They're supposed to recruit these supervillains to their cause, too. And I'm like... Of course, Tony in this era is going to be recruiting supervillains. I'm like, oh, Tony.
But the team is really coming together. Like, they've honed their fighting. And of course, they're fighting some real, you know, basically three kids that stole the armor. So they have no experience with it. So it's not the toughest to beat them. But they did beat Quicksand. And then when they go back, they have a big celebratory dinner that looks like Oktoberfest. In Zemo's castle with the, you know, the turkey and the soup. And it looks like it's this big. But
Melissa doesn't like this whole scheme.
That's because I don't think Zemo cooked the food. He just snapped his fingers and wished it into existence.
Yeah, but the point is that they're eating well, you know, yeah. on the government.
Well, the Thunderbolts like eating.
Yes. I mean, we don't know if they have a movie theater, but what's interesting about this deal is that they do have a way to keep them unconscious thanks to the Fixer. But what the government doesn't know is that Zemo was ahead of them, and he started doing this 3 weeks ago, capturing heroes to convert. And you see we see the Wrecking Crew who they fought, and you know who you see on that top row? A very prominent future Thunderbolt, old Boomerang.
Oh, yeah. And then you have
Batroc.
The new Whiplash.
Scarecrow.
Yeah, that Persuasion, pretty Persuasion. That was at that strip club earlier.
Some of the UFOs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess that's probably Mimic and the Blob down there.
Yeah. Yep. You know what's funny though? You got to look this up on YouTube. Is there's a Marvel Minimates, Dark Tide DVD box set in here? Like you get the four Minimates, and apparently they made a short animated or it says full length. Maybe it's not that short. I just assume like it's not gonna be that long. Because they're Minimates. But there's a full-length animated feature with these Morrison New X-Men Minimates. Never saw that. Totally forgot about it.
I think it's interesting that this is this deal that Zemo's making here is not only the beginning of the end of the Thunderbolts as we've come to know them since their inception, except for the Fight Bolts, but it's also going to really define the Thunderbolts title for what it'll be from here until the end of it. This whole government connection, being government agents, this whole thing, it's all here when Zemo's signing on the dotted line to agree to be agents of the government.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to last a good, 80 issues or so, probably.
Right.
Wow, that is a long run.
Yeah. Well, Zemo's asking Songbird, aren't you happy? Like, the Thunderbolts are legit now in area.
So that's a good, we'll leave with 103 as our stopping point, right in the middle of Civil War. What'll happen? I thought these were, like I said, I have some nitpicks here and there, and I don't like the characterization, but they're still engaging issues for me. I'll still keep reading them. I don't feel like they're the best, but I mean, there's enough in there that I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, I want to know what happens next.
I kept them putting off reading 100. Because I was just, I didn't know the smuggler, but I knew the whole Photon thing was
going to... You knew you were going to have to read about all that Grandmaster stuff in issue 100.
Yeah,
oh, no, but it wasn't there. Oh, boy. But it wasn't there at all.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know that went on so long. And then you get to the Civil War issue, and I'm like, I think I enjoyed that issue the most. Like, I'm not a huge Civil War fan. Like, I read it, I thought it was all right at the times, but, you know, after the... Yeah, some of those characters were out of character, so I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could go back to Civil War, but I think that was the most enjoyable issue out of these. Probably like seeing Quicksand and all those dudes and stuff like that.
Yeah, do you have any, as long-time listeners know, Kevin, sometimes kept contemporaneous thoughts. Do you have any 2006 thoughts, Kevin?
I have some 2006 calendar ratings.
Oh, I thought you were going to say scars. where you dug it out, dug your forearm with your other gnarly hand.
There is no way 2006 Kevin was going to quit the book, even though it wasn't the strongest. Like, I think the Fight Bolts was the only time I ever threatened.
That's nothing like 2016 Kevin, who's like two issues in and he's off the book.
No, well, 2016 Kevin buys a lot of comics, and it's a golden age of comics. And then, well, I guess comics aren't really more expensive now than they were in... Oh, no, 2006. Yes, no, comics were cheaper in 2006. But anyways.
Well, not issue 100.
Getting off topic. But there's a lot of comics out there. And apparently I don't just stick around a title that's not producing or whatever.
I think 2006 Kevin... I think 2006 Kevin would be disappointed in 2016.
Well, 2006 Kevin doesn't know that there's a subscription service called Marvel Unlimited where he can just read it in a few months. So I think if you know, with the Fight Bolts thing, like, you don't have to buy those issues. You can just wait till they show up on Marvel Unlimited. You'd be fine with Fight Bolts.
And you don't have to read them there either.
Well, except some of us did buy them.
I was actually wondering if I would enjoy Fight Bolts more than the current Thunderbolts. Because Fight Bolts wasn't really that bad. It wasn't Thunderbolts at all, but it wasn't that bad, really.
Wow.
It was weird. But I was kind of wondering which one I would enjoy more. And I'm like, I couldn't honestly, like, say. I was like, I was just like, well, it is Thunderbolts, so maybe I should pick Thunderbolts, but...
you know what, Steve? I think 2020 Kevin's going to have a lot to say about 2016 Kevin.
It's true.
Anyways, the ratings.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, issue 100, he gave it a 6.
Huh. Is that because he considered the back matter?
I don't think so. Even though it was high priced, I think it was pretty much a main story deal.
That's a protest vote right there because of Gina Svell's being offed. But he was offed several issues earlier. You just didn't realize it.
Yeah, sadly. 2 issues in a row with the same rating. So 101 and 102 are both 7s.
Well, that's good. I mean, not great, but it's better than 6.
And then once you get to 103, you get up to 7.5.
Wow, climbing.
Yeah. So we're on an upward trend, so that's positive.
Good. Well, I hope listeners join us as we continue our trek through Thunderbolts, as long as I can keep wrangling my two co-hosts to push forward with this, we'll keep going. Maybe we'll see Jim Zub's Thunderbolt someday, but until then, keep making it justice like lightning.
You gotta buy those issues first, Andrew.
No, Marvel Unlimited.
Bought the first 2.
That's what I mean.